Blog Talk Radio.
Serving up the beats and making it hot. It's DJ IQ.
Hello, America. Hi, and welcome to the Sister to Sister For Real show. Tonight, I have a long, very good, interesting show. We will definitely be dedicating this show to the World AIDS Day, which will be taking place tomorrow. And in addition to that, we will be having the legendary Dr. Ayanna Christian on the line to share with us about a couple of things about her research and things that she do in the medical field and in the Black GP, GP SLT community. We also will have I also will be interviewing Luna Khan. I also will be having Twiggy Garcon on the line. And all these people are a part of different organizations that are resources for AIDS testing and counseling and all different types of AIDS awareness. I don't have a lot of time here today, so I'd like for all you callers out there, first of all, I want to say I hope everyone is having a wonderful night. Hello to the chat rooms, and I don't know how many callers we have on the line. The show is actually being done a little bit earlier than normal, so today we're going to get right into getting started into my interview. A lot of you people know, or if you don't know, you need to be calling your girlfriends and your friends, and mainly your leaders and your mothers of houses, and you young children. This show is also dedicated to you as well. You can hear some insight on the legendary Dr. Ayanna Christian and her insight of her life and her story about where she's come from and where she plans to go with all her new endeavors. I'm not going to go on too long and take too much of time because we have people on the queue, and I am moving on a time schedule, so I want to be very on point as far as my time. I need a lot of you guys to bear with me. It's a lot going on, a lot of papers and stuff over here, so I have to get everything in together and everything. I want to give a special thanks to my mother, Joseph Princess, who helped me gather this together, and Letitia and Titi and all the other people, and Luna, that also helped me gather all this information together for the World AIDS Day, which will be taking place tomorrow. I'm going to go into my first commercial, and then we will go into what I have for Dr. Ayanna Christian. Can you give us can you please give me my commercial, please?
The Baltimore City Health Department and the Baltimore Ballroom Coalition present the second annual Mini Ball Deluxe Conference. Know Your Status, Saturday, December 10th, 2011, at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, 300 South Charles Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21201. 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. The ball will start and end on time. Free HIV testing, door prizes, and raffles.
Cost for the function.
Free. Commentated by the icon Jay Blonick and Sierra Ebony. Beaten by the legendary Vonna Lore. Know Your Status.
Categories include Mini Grand Prize number 1, Sex Siren. Mini Grand Prize 2, Legendary Open to All. Grand Prize number 1,
$500.
Runway, open to all. Grand Prize number 2, $500. Open to all performance. Special category, the house with the most people tested.
For more information, please call Keith Ebony Holt at 443-690-5044. Now you're back.
The Baltimore City Health Department and the Baltimore Ballroom Coalition present the second annual Mini Ball Deluxe Conference. Know Your Status. Saturday, December 10th, 2011, at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, 300 South Charles Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21201.
Know Your Status.
Okay, we're back, and Switchboard, you can now bring on my lovely song for the legendary Dr. Ayanna Christian. recognition of the World AIDS and Day, the World AIDS Day, and the celebration of our fabulous Boardroom community, we are pleased to have the Royal House of Christian, Dr. Ayanna Christian, a healthcare practitioner who specializes in working with the Black GPLT community and our living legend. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ayanna Christian. Ayanna?
Hi, Nicole. Good evening. Hello, everyone.
Good evening. Hi. How are you? Did you like your introduction? Is that okay?
I think I was kind of overwhelmed. I was taken aback a little bit. What a beautiful song. And I love Stevie.
Oh, thank you. I definitely want to be able to make you feel as comfortable as possible. I know you don't, you're not into these radio shows and talk show, but this is a platform where we are basically giving awareness to the young generation about people and living legends like yourself who have done so much and is doing so much for the community. So I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. You know, you have to be to work tomorrow early in the morning to come and do the show and everything. But how are you feeling? How's your day and how was work for you today?
It's been a really long day. Wednesdays are always, you know, it's the hump day and it's one of my longest working days. So it's kind of been, you know, its usual self, but I'm still holding, you know, I'm holding myself together. And I'm actually happy that I was able to come on today and be with you for the interview. So thank you for the invitation.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for doing it. I know you have such a busy schedule. So I want to just go in. We have a couple of different sectors of the situation. So I just wanted to go in and start by saying, just tell us a little. I want to know a little bit about your childhood, as in where was you born, Ayanna Christian? Where was you born?
Well, I'm actually born in Camden, New Jersey. I relocated or transplanted to Washington, D.C. in my early adolescence, where I actually went to middle school through high school in college and have been here ever since. So, typically, people feel as though the place where you go to high school and that sort of thing is like where you're from. So I get tagged as being a Washingtonian all of the time, but the truth is that I'm originally from New Jersey.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know that. I have always thought in that you were from D.C., and I've known you since I was very young, and I've always thought you were from D.C., so you learned something and everything.
I've been here a long time, and D.C. has kind of groomed me, so I think it's very easily to assume that without any problem.
Okay, thank you. And how was your home life? And do you have any siblings? Did you live with both parents?
I'm actually the product of a single parent. I was majorly raised by my mother. However, I spent time with my dad, and I actually lived with my dad for many years as a teenager, first in about the sixth grade, and then again in high school. So I've kind of bounced back and forth between my parents. I am the oldest of four. I only have two living siblings now. Two of my younger brothers were killed in street violence.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
But I definitely have siblings, and my siblings are pretty close. I'm pretty close with particularly my sister and both of my brothers who are no longer with us. Kind of having that ongoing process with my my brother who's right up under me in terms of his transition in my transition. So it's working. It's a working process. He just got married this summer. So it seems like that whole thing of him getting his life together for himself has kind of turned a new leaf for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited about that. So.
Oh, okay. Congratulations and congratulations. I hope all that also work out to be really fine. Everything is a work in process. Would you consider your childhood to be happy? Did you, you know, fairly have a happy childhood life?
I would have to say I did. Having a single parent, you know, a mother who worked more than one job, you know, all of the things that come with that, pretty challenging. But in terms of feel, you know, of love and warming, I think I had all of that. And even though we weren't rich and we were considered to be what was the low income, I think my mom provided a lot for me. I think I've, you know, done and had a lot more opportunities than a lot of other people whom you would consider to be of a lower income status. So I'd have to say yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, like, so tell us a little about how was you introduced to the whole ballroom community?
My introduction, I think, came by way of just being out in the community with friends and, you know, having a reputation for, you know, being this kind of in crowd. I think that I started to socially network with mm-hmm. some people in the ballroom scene, even though I was not in the ballroom scene. Mm-hmm. And many of those people kind of like gave me this eye-opening, you know, introduction. And I wasn't quite sure if it was for me. But, you know, I rode the sideline and kind of watched and listened and looked at the tapes and food and odd, you know, how you do when you're new, when it's all new. And
yeah.
That was just my exposure. Garnett Revlon was one of those people who introduced me really to kind of like what balls were and the concepts behind that. And I didn't actually participate in my first ball till maybe like 3 years or so later. So.
Oh, okay. Wow, Garnett Revlon, my auntie, I love her. I've known her for a long time. And what was your first house, Dr. Ayanna? What was your first house that you joined in entering the ballroom scene, the ballroom community?
The first house I actually joined was the House of Allure. And I'm not sure if too many people know that.
No.
Or they even remember that. But I walked my first new face category in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it as if it was yesterday because I remember what I was wearing and everything. And it's kind of like one of those times where, you know, everything was really, really important in terms of female figures with their presentation and their dress. And not that it's not today, but, you know, it was very simple, you know, and pulling something together. I had a little dress that, some, you know, that my house had given me to walk in and, you know, a pair of pumps and earrings and at that time, I didn't really get into the whole, you know, full painted face thing. I was a washed face girl.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Washed face. Okay. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
My signature was lip gloss and lined lips. That was it.
That's funny. That's mine now, and I'm just Banji, a Banji kind type of girl. So that's funny. That was, you know, that's mine. I put a little lip gloss over my eyelids and to brighten up the whole situation. So that's funny that you say that. What was your actual, I'm sorry if I didn't hear you, but what was your actually first category and your first grand prize win? And was you a part of the House of the Law?
My first category was New Face.
Okay, New Face, yes, okay, you did say that, I'm sorry. And what was your first grand prize win? And were you still a part of the House of the Law?
Actually, I had transitioned shortly after my debut in the ballroom scene. I had got, you know, sort of remorseful in that whole process of joining a house when my friends and my family, those who I grew up with and went to high school with, had become members of what is now known as the House of Khan. So feeling, you know, my allegiance to my friends and wanting to be where my family was, I joined the House of Khan maybe 3 or 4 months later. And that's where I have been, had been until just recently.
Okay, so you is it safe to say that your first grand prize was actually with the House of Khan?
My first grand prize was with the House of Khan. It was Robert Revlon's If It Wasn't For Me, Where Would I Be, Ball.
Robert Revlon, name from a past. Okay, thank you. That was interesting. Who, Ayana, tell us, who are some of the people that you admire in the ballroom community?
It depends on what aspect we're talking about. You know, are we talking about ballroom? Are we talking about...
Right, yeah, I did say the ballroom community. So some of the people that you...
Inside ballroom, doing ballroom.
I mean, you can be abroad with it. It could be inside ballroom. You can know them actually from the ballroom community, and you can admire someone from a distance. So I just mean just the ballroom community in and outside. But, you know, it's surrounding the ballroom community.
Well, my first kinship and mentor in ballroom was Sanaa Ebony. And that was in 1996 when I was frequenting Baltimore. I would go down mm-hmm. when she lived in Baltimore. Her and I became really close, and she was one of the people that showed me the ropes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I mean inside and outside ballroom.
Okay.
That is one person.
That's one. Okay, that's good. And who is or was your favorite femme queen? And why?
My favorite femme queen past would have to be Danielle. Danielle Revlon.
And why?
I would have to say because I admired her attitude and her tenacity. Mm-hmm. If not anything else, I had the opportunity to meet her and to talk with her outside of ballroom. So I knew a lot about who she was as a woman, and that for me kind of catapulted my admiration for her, just because I understood that she was not only this popular person, you know, on the runway, but that she was fabulous outside of all. I mean, in every descriptor.
Yes, I live for her. I love me some Danielle. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way that you feel about Danielle. I love everything that she has taught and put out in just ballroom and outside of ballroom. So I love that also. So after now that you know you've been introduced to the ballroom. You've spent a short period of time in the House of Allure, moving on to your family that was the House of Khan at the time. And now, who or what inspired you to come back and to reopen the House of Christian?
Well, Nicole, I had this really this really dry period in ballroom where I kind of felt like I was done with the ballroom scene and that I had done all that I could in terms of walking and winning. And I decided to take, you know, my own hiatus and sit out on the sidelines and, you know, make appearances every now and then. But then I started doing work in my grad school program, working on my master's at the time. And I, for one of my projects, looked at some of the literature for transgender people. And in doing my research and my studies, I realized how disproportionately affected trans people were, particularly around their high rates of unemployment, homelessness, mental health issues, lack of access to quality healthcare. And I said, well, you know, I know a lot of these people that they're talking about. You know, this described my group of friends. This described the people who I knew and I loved. And I said, well, you know, what is it about this situation that I as an individual can help change? And so I began these conversations with great researchers in the field, and they began to, you know, discuss with me all of the new and evolving research on the transgender community. And then I heard something about ballroom, and I said, you people know about the ballroom? And they were like, yeah, we know all about the house and ball community. And I said, interesting. I'm a product of the house and ball community. And they just, like, went ballistic.
I can imagine.
And it was like, you know, a treasure hunter striking gold, and it catapulted conversations with many people to which I began to have conversations about how, you know, people, you know, particularly those who are really embedded in the struggle to help the LGBT community, how they wanted to help the house and ball community.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, in order to really be able to help, you need someone who is familiar.
Okay.
And that familiarity came by, you know, my personal experience. So it behooved me to develop a way that I could, you know, remain, you know, active in the community, trying to do what I see or what I saw at the time would benefit, you know, the community in which I know and I love. So I had some conversations with Charles, who is the father of the House of Christian, about how he and I should start our own organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a conversation that was had, you know, several times, even before we actually moved to take any real action.
Mm-hmm.
But over this past summer, there were some things that took place with, you know, within my previous house that, you know, I just had, you know, a real driving force to say, you know, it's time and you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Charles and I said, well, I'm ready and this is the time. And Charles said, well, come on and let's do this. So we did. And I think that our conversations very early on about what we were looking for from the Rock, that's what we call the Royal House of Christian, what we were looking to come from, you know, in terms of where we wanted our house to go in the ballroom scene was that we were aiming for a dual institution, an institution that had, you know, two roles, one inside the ballroom scene and also one that was active within the community. And so in us soliciting, you know, our base or our foundation members who are now who are actually the members of our house board, we were very clear in what we envisioned for our organization. And when those people heard what we were trying to do, it was like they wanted to know, where did they sign up? So that is how the Rock came to be.
Right.
So we made our debut in August 2011 at the Latex Ball. I think it was August 20th, and it was a big to-do for myself as well as our members, because to be representing a boutique organization, you know, stepping out on faith to do something in which two people just envision and put together was really big. And, you know, these were people who were proud to be a part of that. So.
Okay, that's so. And now we have the Royal House of Christian, in which I call it the Rock.
The
I like
Rock.
That.
Yeah.
The Rock. I like that. I like that. Okay, I have a couple of more questions. I know you can't be up here all night. I want to prepare you listeners. Ayanna, we will go into some callers shortly. Anybody that's on the phone line that would like to come and give any type of statements or pay homage to the Dr. Ayanna Christian, you can all feel free to press 1. Anything regarding or anything that's relevant to this conversation will be greatly, you know, respected on this platform. Anything else will be dismissed. So, Ayanna, before I go into my next call and into my commercial break, I want to ask, what lessons have you taken with you from the House of Karn, your family, as you lead the new house, the royal new house of Christian, the House of Rock? What lessons have you been able to transform over now as you lead your own founder, your own organization?
I think it's that sense of community and camaraderie. As I said before, we were all high schoolmates.
Mm-hmm.
Either, you know, we went to the same school or we were all in high school at the same time. You know, we lived together, we fellowshipped together. So it was really a familial bond that was there. And moving over to the House of Christian, one of the things that we had set out to do was to create an infrastructure that was boutique and rather small, that would enable us to keep that close, mended relationship with our membership, you know, allow the leaders to be really hands-on, especially with our young adult members, many whom are students, and a few who are actually novice ballroom experience. So they've never done ballroom before, but have taken a sense of interest in being a part of this organization and coming, you know, and participating in ballroom. So it's one of those things where everything that I've learned in terms of being a individual, you know, because individuality and diversity goes hand in hand, and that's one thing that we strive to as a institution. The mission of fostering individuality and acceptance of all. And I think that you find with any house you'll have, you know, different personalities, but how can you make that work for the good of the whole is probably one of the best things that I could have taken with
me. Oh, word. I like that. I really like that. I think I need to put that on my agenda and moving forward and taking things that we have learned from different situations. I really like that. I appreciate that answer. Okay, I want to, Ayanna, if you can bear with me, I know you have to get up out of here. I probably need about 15 more minutes or 20 minutes of your time. I know we were scheduled to get off at in about 10 minutes, but I do have a couple of more questions, and I do also want to be able to share the interview with the community that is listening to you and that would like to be able to address you or pay homage or make a statement or comment to you. So I'm going to go into my commercial break, and then we can come back and we can take a few callers, and then we can continue on with the interview, is that okay, if that's okay.
Yes, it's fine.
Okay, sure. Switchboard, the commercial, please, and we'll be right back.
The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball, Saturday, May 5th, 2012. Doors open at 5 p.m. Admission $30 all night. Location, Symphony Ballroom at the Blake Hotel, Uptown, Charlotte, North Carolina. Commentators, icon Jack Mizrahi and icon Jay Manolo Blahnik. DJ, legendary Vonalore. Grand prize, $1,500. Bush Queen Realist with a Twist. Mini grand prize, $500. Bush Queen Vogue Fest. Mini grand prize, $500. Bush Queen European Runway. Categories include male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Bush Queen Face. One trophy, one cash prize of $250. Open to all, foot and eye. Male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Open to all, team frequent. One trophy, one cash award of $300. And 13 other $100 categories. The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball. Saturday, May 5th, 2012, Charlotte, North Carolina. See you there.
Okay, Welcome back, everyone. If you're just joining us, and I'm from all across America, and you guys out there in Radio Land and in the chat room, tonight is my World AIDS dedication to the whole World ACEs. And, of course, we have the none of the no other, Dr. Ayanna Christian, who is here with us, giving us an insight on what she has been through and what she's going through and what she has prepared for us all in the community for the future. I'm going to go into Ayanna, if you're still there.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm gonna go into I'm gonna take a couple of callers. Let's not forget, at 12 o'clock will be the World AIDS Day, and we'll be moving on into some Luna Khan and Twiggy Garcon, who will come up here and give us a little bit of insight on what their organization is doing and what is World AIDS Day and what will be taking place on that day and all different type of testings and what their organization can offer to may help you. So if you're a leader, a mother, a father on the phone lines, and this is a very positive topic, and it'd be very resourceful to all of you guys if you can just get on the phone line and just listen in, I'm sure you all will be blessed. My first caller of the evening is 347-533. Welcome to the Sister to Sister For Real Show.
Yes, hi, this is RR.
Hi, RR. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Ayanna, I just wanted to congratulate you, on your degree, and also let you know that I've always thought that you were a very classy lady and that you always had your finger on the pulse. I've admired you for many years from a distance, and we very rarely get a chance to sit down and have a real conversation, but the respect is always there, which is a mutual respect. But what I wanted to ask you is, if you had to give a mission statement to the ballroom, what would you say as a mission statement to the ballroom that would help unite us together as one?
I think that one of the things, first of all, I'd like to say thank you, RR. I really appreciate your kind words. And yes, we've known each other for a very long time in passing in the ballroom scene, and the respect is there. To answer your question, in terms of mission of the house and ballroom community coming together, one of the things that I find is the problem is that when you try to bring unity in the setting of competition, there is a strong head of discourse, meaning that the two don't really align. And I know people try, to compare ballroom with, other sporting events or, other competitive kind of activities. But ballroom is different, especially when you have cash and cash prizes on the line. Things become really fierce and intense. And I think that when you have that at stake, that it becomes difficult to align, the different sects. This is what I would say. If I were trying to be that person who was going to be the uniter, the one who would try and close the gap between, the world we live in and the struggle to be one, is that I think that valuing the differences we all have, making everyone feel accepted, loved, and supported, would be one way that we could seek to unite the ballroom. Preparing these house members to participate in an ever-changing, interdependent world is very necessary. The world is changing, and I'm not sure if everyone around us is aware, and it's kind of calling for us to cultivate, very diverse groups of people, and a ballroom has a great platform to help build this effective citizenry and, you know, make leaders for the future. And that's leaders with, you know, inside and outside ballroom. You know, I take my own situation as an example, you know, from somebody who's gone from, you know, being, you know, a house mother, which, you know, I'm not saying it's nothing, but, you know, what does that mean in terms of the real world when I, you know, step out of the door of my home and I go to work or I go to church or somewhere like that? Being a house mother doesn't mean anything, but the skills that I learn being a house mother have equated into making some things in my life different. And that being said, you know, I'm here today partially because of the things that I learned from my experience as a house mother and as a ballroom participant. Given the opportunity, you know, for other houses to capitalize on that, I think, you know, we would need to bring more opportunities for fellowship without the competition piece. Like, I've been for the longest time trying to conceptualize how we can do activities that are ballroom related but not ballroom. And I found that that's not what people always want to do. Like, you'll have parties and various activities. They go well in some places. I know they go well here in D.C., but when you talk about that in really ballroom-ready cities like New York City, I don't think that people really respond to that. You know, it's one of those things where maybe everybody's not ready to be that unified. I don't know. But my suggestion is the mission would be to work to recognize diversity and to make things more purposeful, you know, in what we do.
Okay.
And
I understand. That sounds really good. And also, I must say that, and a part of that is leading by example. And I guess by you doing what you have done in your life, your kids can actually look at you and say, if she can do it, then I can do it too. Because I think a lot of the mothers and fathers fall short on leading by example in the real world, but they lead by example in the ballroom community. And they need to prepare the ballroom community for the outside world where it really counts. So we really need to mold our children, not so much for a category, but to be able to get a job in the real world, be able to get a degree or a GED or something in the real world. And if they see us doing something of that nature, then they'll be more willing to do it too. But you can't tell somebody to eat mud and you won't share it with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I think that is very true. That is our motto. At the Rock, to empower
well,
the
I have
community.
I have a lot of respect for you and commend you on making your new longevity into the House of Christian, as you call it, the Rock. And I wish you guys much success and keep coming out and letting the girls see what true beauty is made of and that it's not pumped up and full of silicone, that it's all natural and hormones. And I love that about you.
Thank you, R.R.
That was the icon pioneer, R.R. Chanel. My next caller on this phone line today on the Sister to Sister Coalition is 347-985. You are live on the Sister to Sister Coalition show. Hello? You're gone. My next caller is 917-502. You're live on the air on the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Hi, Nicole. This is your grandma. How are you?
Hi, Stanley. Hi, grandmother. How are you?
Hi. You know, I can't say a blade, so I just want to get this in. Dr. Ayana, I don't know you, but I've heard a lot about you, and I'm very proud of you from a distance. Of all your accomplishments, I work at Bellevue Hospital. I'm a public health advisor. And I see a lot of the youth, the gay youth, that come through there with no direction. So when I seen you at the ball and I seen that you are actually starting a movement, I thought that was refreshing because I think that's what the ballroom community needs. And kind of what the caller just said prior to this is that we need people in the ballroom community that kind of lead by example, because a lot of people in the ballroom community don't have identities. They live that life and they think that that's who they are, but when the ballroom ends, they have nowhere to run to and no place to go. And I think that's kind of really sad, because there's a lot of talent and there's a lot of beautiful people in the ballroom, but just a lot of lost souls. So I just want to commend you on what you have done and where you're taking your movement to. I think that it's warranted and it's needed at this time. And I wanted to ask you, what can the ballroom community do to support you and your movement?
I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you. One of the many things that I'm currently working on is working with the HIV Prevention Research Network at the George Washington University Department of Epidemiology. And what they're proposing to do is to put together a research study around ballroom that evaluates many of the contributing factors that have been identified as contextual risk factors for increased prevalence for HIV and AIDS within the community. And very oftentimes when we go to different houses to, you know, solicit support, we don't always get the, you know, the warm welcome. There is a lot of resistance to aiding, you know, this group of individuals who are trying to help ballroom and not hinder. And it's sometimes seen as one of those picking and prying things. And I've been kind of acting as the liaison to try and educate those particular houses about what it is that is being done, what at the end of the day will result from the house's participation. And it's not even, you know, a thing about, well, you know, are we going to get money, or, you know, can you throw us a ball, or, you know, can you support one of our grand prizes? It's more about taking knowledge about our community and being able to communicate, you know, the needs of our community to local, state, and federal agencies. Because, you know, as we are talking about World AIDS Day tomorrow, the people that are most affected by this disease are the people of color. The ballroom is 90% people of color. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about those who suffer the inequality of being disproportionately affected by this disease. Here is you know, an institution that wants to help, but they don't get the assistance that they need. And not saying that, you know, we as African Americans have never been wronged in terms of research. And I speak about the, you know, the Tuskegee experiment, which is traditionally one of the long, you know, one of the most popular,
mm-hmm,
well-known.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the,
don't forget
most popular,
that the medicines and stuff was always geared towards white men at first.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't
and
really
so,
about black people.
And so what that has done to us, you know, to people of color, and done to our psyche over the years, is kind of given, you know, the medical community and researchers, you know, this establishes a sense of distrust. And I think that's pretty, you know, resounding here now when we talk about, you know, bringing researchers into ballroom to kind of identify how it is that ballroom could be helped. around, you know, reducing HIV, and not just reducing HIV, but also how you can get those who are HIV positive tested and aware of their status and into treatment, which we know saves lives.
Yeah, this is true. In response to what you just said, have you, as a suggestion, have you ever thought about reaching out to the people like myself and other people who are in the ballroom community that actually work in the field of HIV and AIDS to kind of start a coalition?
I'm going to be honest and tell you, I have so many conversations with so many people, you know, at different points, at different, you know, junctures, and yes, we want to help, we want to do more, but then when you get serious about it, and I'm a serious person, I'm professional as they come. You know, when I say that I set out to do, you know, a project or work on something, I'm going to do it. I may not do it right then and there, but when I get ready, I'm ready. And what I found is that, you know, people talk that talk, but then they don't show up for action and ready to work. And that kind of bothers me because, you know, much of the work I do is not, it's selfless. I don't get paid. Mm-hmm. I work, you know, my job that I go to every day that pays me my paycheck, that I pay my mortgage with and the rest of my bills. The work that I do for the community, nobody pays me for. So it's one where I spend my time doing, and I'm passionate about it, and I think that for me is all of the more the reward, you know. It's priceless.
Okay.
I love to have more people to work with, you know, people who are really interested in being in the struggle, you know. I'm always accessible. My Facebook is Ayana Girls and Girl Christian. I respond to my messages, not as quickly as I'd like to, but I do. I communicate better through email. I'm doing so many different things right now that the ballroom community has the opportunity to participate, whether it's my trans woman project, whether it's the trans man project that I'm trying to get underway, whether it's this research study with the university. You know, if anyone ever has the inkling to, you know, to join in this venture, they're more than welcome to. This is not, you know, it's not DC specific. It's not, I mean, some of my own projects are not DC specific. You know, I work in New York. I did a trans woman seminar in New York City this summer. Saddened to say I didn't have as many trans women that I know come out and participate, particularly ballroom girls. I did have some support, and I'm not afraid to, you know, to say Stephanie Milan was one of those people that came out. I think she was probably one of the only ballrooms, and I was really, really grateful for her support in that. But New York City, you know, where there's thousands of trans women, I didn't get the type of, you know, outpouring participation that I had expected. And I advertise and I put these things out there. So I'm just, you know, I just want people to be aware that I'm not doing it just to be doing it. I'm doing it trying to make a difference. And I don't have to do it, you know, but I am doing it. And I think that people need to get, you know, in this mindset that, like RR and I talked about, you know, in his previous question, is that, you know, our world is changing. And in the times when, you know, many people are without health care, you know, the economy is going bad, you know, the people that are going to suffer the most are the people that are our girlfriends, our boyfriends, and our kiki buddies. okay? It's not going to be, you know, those other people. And I'm just going to use that term because I don't, you know, want to turn this into a race thing. But it's not going to be those people. It's going to be us. So, you know, we need to wake up in terms of thinking about how it is we can come together and help one another. And, you know, you have my, you know, you have my contact information. And for anyone else out there who's listening, you know, shoot me a message. Let me know where you are, what you do. You know, shoot off your ideas. You know, I'm not afraid to share my ideas because I think that, you know, community and sharing what you have in your mindset kind of helps to further develop what's going on, and we can work. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It was nice talking to you. And again, my name is Stanley Princess. And when you come to New York, hopefully we'll meet. And again, much success to you and your movement. Okay.
Thank you, Stanley.
Right, Nicole, I love you, but you know I have to go to bed because I will not be no good at work tomorrow if I don't go to bed. Good night.
Thank you, Grandma. Thank you very, very, very much. Thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for staying up as long to support the show. Thank you very much. Okay, we have now today, it's 12 o'clock. It's World AIDS Awareness Day. I do have the callers and my participants that's on the line. You guys just bear with me a little second, and we will be wrapping up this interview. Ayanna, you have answered a lot of the questions that I had to answer you within the callers that have called. I'm going to take two more callers, and really quickly and shortly, could you, you know, if you want, like, to respond to their questions. And the callers that are out there, quickly and shortly, I do have other people scheduled for their time slot, and now it's 12 o'clock, and it's the next day, and today is World AIDS Awareness Day. So we definitely want to go into that. But my next caller is 917-363. You're live on the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Nicole, how you doing? This is Tim Princess.
Hi, Tim. How are you? How are you? How are you?
I'm doing great. Hi, Ayanna.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to call and say, I just wanted to just ask a quick question, and I also wanted to say that you're a huge inspiration. But really quickly, hello? Can y'all hear me?
Yes. No, go ahead, Tim. You're there.
Okay, really quickly, I'm currently a grad student, right? And my ultimate goal is to start my own CBO, targeting at-risk African-American and Latinos in the LGBT community.
Right.
So my question is, what would be some of the challenges and barriers in terms of getting, like, financial support and government funding for, you know, this type of vision?
Well, that's interesting that you chose that to focus on the challenges. My thought process more for me is about thinking, you know, how can I start this organization, and what would I need to do that. More so than the challenges. I mean, the list of challenges could be ongoing, and I would never want you to focus on them because that's going to be always your roadblock, because you'll self-defeat yourself when thinking about them. But I can just tell you that no matter what you're trying to do, there will always be another organization that's going to do what you're doing better than you. They're going to be larger than you, you'll figure that when you're trying to do what you're trying to do out of your own commitment, that it means that you won't make a difference, but that won't be true. You know, bigger is not better.
Right.
And so one of the things that I find when, you know, doing my own thing with my house is that, you know, we're a small organization and trying to make a big difference. And that never stops me from getting in my house meetings and talking about, well, I want to do this you know, I want us to go out and I want us to get young, you know, young people mentees to, you know, to navigate, you know, where they're going in life, to see how we can help. That, you know, that gets overshadowed because we are, you know, we're a 20-member group at this time. You know, there are other organizations that are really active and doing some of the same things we want to do, but that never stops us from still making our pledge or keeping our commitment to helping the community. I think that when you start conceptualizing your organization, is that what you should do is get you a group of grassroots people that are, you know, that are willing to follow you and help you fulfill your vision. I wouldn't look at, you know, what's going to stop you, because you yourself will stop yourself with that type of perception.
Okay, that was a very nice, interesting answer as well.
Thank you,
the legendary Tim Princess, for calling into my show. Thank you for listening, and thank you for pressing one. Okay, I'm going to do my last final caller before I start to wrap up tonight's interview with the Dr. Ayanna Christian. That call is going to be 215-856. You're live on the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Well, good evening, ladies. How are you? And hello to my sister.
Hi, this is the legendary icon, Tiny Cartier. Hi, Tiny. How are you?
How are you?
Long time no hear. How you been?
Girl, just working. Erica called me and told me that she was going to be on, and I said, oh, God, I got to get up in the morning. But I wanted to call and just say hello and congratulate you also. You know, I tell you this so many times, Ayanna, on this amazing journey that you're on. And Nicole, how are you, my love?
I'm blessed. I won't complain. I'm very blessed, and I won't complain. But I'm so good to hear your voice. And I need to get up with you because I would like to interview you as well. I'm looking for all the leading ladies, so Ayanna being the first. So I need to really get up with you. But I'm so glad that you did come on the show tonight. Thank you very much.
Yes, and Yana, I will call you tomorrow, but I got to get up early in the morning. So I just wanted to call in and say, you know, congratulations, like I said again, on this amazing journey. And we need, especially this community, need such positive and inspirational role models such as yourself in our communities. And I wanted to tell you, you know, I love you so much. But I want to hear everyone out there in Radio Land, you have a wonderful night. And Nicole, you and I, we will touch bases because Stuart actually called me and told me that, you know, you were inquiring about me.
Yeah. So. I'm looking for my leading ladies. So if y'all all out there listening, the Allure girls and Elva, the other girls that are out there from way in the past and that are still here today, please get up with me.
Erica told me that you wanted to interview her also, and I told her to get up, get her, Monica, and get all the girls, honey. You know, we all in this all together.
Thank you for your support, too, and I need it. That's what we all need to be doing.
And everyone have a wonderful and blessed night, and I love you all.
Thank you. And I thank you once again, Ayanna, for coming up on this show and opening up the platform for, you know, the leading ladies. I've been looking for you girls. And, you know, you are so busy in your real life, so I greatly appreciate that. I'm going to do this one last caller because I'm going to end this interview after I ask Ayanna two questions. So I'm going to take this caller. If you're on the phone lines, if Ayanna is still listening, we have to go into the World AIDS today. Is that? And I have Luna and Twiggy that are also in different organizations that are waiting. So I'm going to take this last caller, and I'm going to end it with asking Ayanna the last two questions. And she is actually hitting up your email. Would you say your Facebook and stuff and your email contact again, Ayanna?
My Facebook is Ayanna Golden Girl Christian. And my email is thip.mail@gmail.com.
Okay, there you go. So if you guys are interested, if you guys would like to be a part, participate in her research and all the work that she has been doing and is doing in the community, definitely please hit her up. You saving your life and another life is always a blessing. My last and final caller is 323-901. You are live on the air on the Sister to Sister For Real show.
How you doing, Nicole? My name is AJ. I'm not in the ballroom scene, but Ayana, the beautiful, gorgeous, golden girl, she allowed me to be her stylist when I was in D.C., and she actually was the face of our campaign for the White Party, and she taught me so much, not just about style and elegance, but just about having a presence. So I just wanted to give Ayana a shout-out and tell you that we missed you when you were on the West Coast, and you didn't even call me for your photo shoot, but it's all good.
Oh, my gosh, AJ, hi. Oh, my gosh, I love you so much. Thank you. Yes.
I never told you thank you, but it was because of you my career really got started, and that's how I ended up out here. And you being the face of our campaign, you took our numbers way through the roof. But not only that, you taught us so much just about being a lady and, you know, taught me so much about ballroom. And even subsequent years after that, and allowing me to style you and to trust me with your style, even though you were already iconic, it was just a privilege. So thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness.
You're so beautiful. God bless your soul.
I'm lost for words. I really enjoyed doing that campaign. For those who don't know, the White Campaign was this HIV-AIDS awareness party, which was an all-white affair, and it was an annual event. And one year I had the privilege to participate in and being one of the models for their marketing. And that for me was, one of the things that kind of allowed me to transcend ballroom more into the greater LGBT community, because I don't think many people realize, but, you know, the general GBLT community is separate from ballroom, and there is a divide. It's a very unfortunate thing, but the general gay community ostracizes ballroom, and we don't talk about that a lot amongst ourselves, but it is so true. And what I had the opportunity to do during this White Party thing was to bridge that gap.
Right.
Prior to my participation, there had not been a strong support of this party by the ballroom community without the participation of myself and Whitney Garcon. So it was like one of those things that, you know, I had an aha moment about who I was and what I represented for our community. So, again, thank you, AJ and the crew, for all working me up and putting and giving me a platform as well. And I miss you guys, and you know I've always said that I will be out there soon, please.
We are waiting for garments on hold. And Nicole, this show is amazing. What you are doing with the Legends and Icons is bigger than what you have already anticipated. So God bless you, too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. God bless you, and you have a wonderful night. And thank you for listening, and keep listening, because it gets more.
Thank
it gets
my
better.
My love to Jovan and Father Jules, please.
Well,
hi, guys.
Well done.
Okay, thank you for calling in. Okay, Ayana. So once again, I'm so grateful for you coming up on here and getting everybody. I'm sorry to all the other callers if you didn't get an opportunity to come and pay homage. I actually had to break down a segment because Ayana is a working lady at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm going to ask you my last two questions, and now we're going to end the show, and I'm going to move into you, Luna, and Twiggy, you guys can be able to start pressing one. Ayana, if you still want to fall asleep to this, it's going to get even more interesting. You can. But my next two questions is, what could we look forward in the ballroom community to see from the House of Christian?
What to expect from The Rock. You know, I have this challenge with trying to navigate how the boutique infrastructure will maintain itself, you know, as we progress in our existence. I think for the most part, though, the ideals of The Rock will never change, and that's integrity, peace, and quality, and distinction, where you look to, you know, have someone, you know, tell you about this person that's going to be, you know, walking this category or bringing this grand prize home. I think for me, one of the things that I'm really, you know, one of the things I look forward most to about my organization is my kids graduating, you know, one of my members getting into medical school, you know, my father of my house being, you know, one of those avant-garde leaders within our Black gay community here in Washington, D.C. So you have a lot to look forward from the House of Christian inside and outside the ballroom. I will tell you, though, is that one thing that I have not been surprised by is that, you know, the new kid on the block always gets shaded, you know. I think that you know, it's something that I had not anticipated. You know, and it's there, and we recognize it. But what it tells me more so that we're not ready, or we're not quality, you know, ballroom walkers. But it tells me that someone feels threatened by our potential, and that's reassuring to me.
Okay. That went through. And my last and final question, my next segment, you guys start to prepare yourself. We'll be walking into you too. But my next and final question to you, Dr. Ayana Christian, is who and how would you describe Dr. Ayana Christian?
You know, to put it in a nutshell, Nicole, I'm one individual. I'm one woman who is striving hard to do amazing things that will benefit millions of people. And that is who I am.
Okay. Well, that was just all in a nutshell. Once again, I want to thank you so much, and I want to thank I'm speaking for the callers and everybody out there who can appreciate this conversation, and it has done something for them. I want to thank you for taking the time out to come up on the show tonight and giving us a little personal detail information about yourself. Congratulations on all your new endeavors, and you're doctor now. So, you know, we all have the first leading lady that is a doctor here in the ballroom community, and that also can be you too, guys. So, Ayana, you can say goodnight to the people that are listening, and we'll be moving on.
Good night, everyone, and I hope to see you here in Washington, D.C., February 18th, 2012. The Royal House of Christian presents the rebirth of Carter, something to look forward to. The ballroom scene has its first experience with a ball hosted by me in 2007. And we had some issues with inclement weather because it is February, and February is my birth month, and I usually choose February because, you know, it means that much to me. But I guarantee you that this this year at this function that we're bound to have one of those ballroom history-making moments, right down to our grand march performance. I wouldn't want you to miss it. So be there and be there on time because I wait for no one.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is the legendary Dr. Ayanna Christian. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. We're going to take a commercial break. Luna Khan, the legendary icon, Luna Khan, if you are on the line, press 1. Twiggy, if you are on the line, press 1 so the switchboard can see you guys in the queue. Any of you guys that was Antoine Balenciaga, who's also supposed to be here with us, I'm sorry for my timing. But if you're still on the line, could you guys press 1? We're going to go into a commercial break, and we'll be right back. Thank you, Ayanna. I love you so much. Thank you very much for coming on this show.
Thank you, Nicole. Good night.
Good night. Come out, show.
The Queen of Hearts Birthday Ball Part 2. February 18th, 2012. Youngstown State University Beagley Center, Youngstown, Ohio. Commentators for the evening, legendary Kevin Jay-Z Prodigy and Leslie Derion. $25 all night. Doors open at 10. Legend Sentence Stars at 12:30. Guest list closes at midnight. Cash category. Grand prize open to all Vogue performers. $750. Bring a gift or a $10 pop. Open to all runway. $250. Femme Queen Realist. $150. Butch Queen and Drag Realist The Transformation. $100. Open to all Thug Realists. 4 trophies. 1 cash award. $100. Open to all Sex Sirens. 4 trophies, 1 cash award, $100. Virgin Vogue, $50. The Queen of Hearts Birthday Ball Part 2, February 18th, 2012. See you there.
Girl. Okay, we are back with my Part 2 segment of the show. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, well, today now, it's after 12 o'clock. Today is World AIDS Day. Upon me doing my interview with Ayanna, I needed to find a different part of a segment to do. And I was looking for things, and I was told by a couple of friends, and Luna, who works in the gay men health crisis, who is very, very a part and is affiliated with the AIDS research and resources and places where you can be tested, and even other things that she will be coming on the phone line tonight to talk about as far as that you can have. I'm also going to have Twiggy Gasson, who's a part of Faces, that will come on the phone line, and Antoine, and Luna says she pressed 1. Did you see that number? These guys are going to come on today. They're all advocates of these different AIDS resources organizations. They're going to come on the phone line, and they're basically going to tell us what their organization represent, what type of services do they offer, what and where did the World AIDS Day come from. Today is World AIDS Day. Quickly, I was reading some of the things that Twiggy had on his wall, and I realized, you know, he was talking about how many people have died and how many people we have lost, and we have lost a lot of people in this community for the same very thing, and this is a day that we are going to celebrate, not just the death of them, but the resurrection of our own self. So briefly, I just want all of us just to take a moment of silence before I bring Luna on and Twiggy on, and just take a moment of silence for the people that are not here and for the people that are still here. And I thank you. Okay, my first caller, is this Luna? First caller would be the legendary iconic father, overall father of the House of Khan, Luna Khan. Luna?
Hello.
Hi, Luna. How are you?
Hi.
How's everything?
I'm good. Great listening to Ayanna. I love Ayanna. We share the same views, and I think she's great, and I love the power that she has, and, you know, she's a smart girl and knows what she wants, and I always loved and adore her, even before, you know, the Khan days, so, yeah.
And I'm glad that she came on this line. I'm actually glad. I think this is all just God itself, that how this was all planned. You have to know, people, that I didn't plan this, and it all just ended up happening by me having a long, frustrating day trying to get this all together. So, Luna, you are here with us, and today is World AIDS Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, before we go into you telling us about that, because that's very interesting, and myself, who's always so into all of this, did not know about this. So I want to just first start off just telling the community, everybody in the chat rooms and just came on the phone line, we have now just moved to the part two segment of my show, and we are here with the legendary icon and Luna Khan, overall Father Khan. And Luna, could you just tell the community, what is it that you do, what organization is it that you work for?
Yes. Well, I am a community health specialist, and I've been working at GMAC since 2007. And what I do there is I work with young people. I empower people. I support people. I guide people, young people. And I try to help them prevent from getting HIV. And I help support the ones that have HIV in ways that could improve their lives in terms of medication, where to go, housing, all of that. So, you know, what's interesting is that I fell into this field because, you know, I was infected, in the 80s. And so this is not what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be an architect. And a lot of people wouldn't know that. But, finding out that, you know, at 14 that I had HIV and I had 2 years to live, waiting, you know, for by the time I was 16, I was like, wow, what am I going to do? And so that's when I started to want to do this type of work. And I started off by being a peer educator. I was a peer educator at Stand Up Harlem. I was a peer educator at Harlem United. And then I started to work at Hedrick Marin Institute, the institute that helped me discover who Luna is. And so, and now I'm at GMAC. GMAC, as you know, is like the first agency that existed after the epidemic. So HIV AIDS turns 30 this year. GMAC turns 30 this year as well. And it started in a small brownstone. Like, a whole bunch of gay men were like, we need to help our friends. And the first location was brownstone in Chelsea on 22nd Street in New York City. And with time and effort and dedication and love, it turned into a huge major agency that does a million things to support the community affected and infected. So, yeah, GMAC is powerful. So.
What are some of the personal things that GMAC offer to the young youth and the older youth that are out there?
Well, I mean, there's lots of services at GMAC. They have, like, legal services. They have prevention services. They have meals services as well. Like, if you're hungry, come to GMAC, you get fed. They have a lot of supportive support groups in terms of like AA and then HIV support groups. They have things that are for negative people, because of course negative people need support too, because their friends are infected.
Right.
So we do a lot of that. I know currently for the last 2 years, because the contract changed, I work now with young men who are between the ages of 13 and 19, and Obama gave us $1.5 million to create this program, which is now called Club 1319, and it was basically because between the ages of 13 and 19, the numbers are rising, surprisingly, and so, you know, we got this coin to support and be there for that population in a leadership way. So, so that's what I do now. I do that with Jazzy as well. Jazzy is also a part of Jazzy Khan. He's a part of that project as well. And him and I both actually run a drop-in center. Young people could come in. They do workshops. Some of them, they are incentivized. Some of them aren't. Sometimes we have fun things like Vogue 101. Sometimes they could just go check and check their Facebooks. So it's really just a way to being there for young people, because obviously, you know, young people need love and support and guidance. And so that's what we do. And we try to be sort of a father or mother figure to young people. in the best that we can, obviously, because we're not fathers and mothers.
But, thank God.
But, yeah, so that's what we do.
I want to take some time to thank God for you and thank God for Jamin Health Crisis, because without these services, a lot of people would have nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. So I just want to take this moment and just thank God for you and thank God for you being in this field for as long as you have been in this field.
And you know what's fabulous, too, is that it wasn't JMHC. It was the community, the housing ball scene said in 1989, they came to JMHC and they said, you know, a lot of our members are dying from our community. What and how can you help us? And so people like Avis and Derek Ebony and Hector Extravaganza and a whole bunch of others, Roger and Terry Milan, you know, they started to create these groups that eventually turned into the House of Latex. And in 1991 is when the first House of Latex ball happened. But between 89 and 91, it was all meetings. And I remember being in the up in the office and Avis telling me, oh, I'm going to this meeting at the Gay Men's Health Crisis, you know, to discuss how and what they're going to do with this project now. And so it's great, and it's a circle for me because my mother Avis was a part of this and my father Hector was a part of this. So I feel special that I am a part of something that was created by the ballroom scene. And a lot of people don't know that history, but it started with the community saying, hey, how can you support us? How can you, you know, what can we do? Can you bring mm-hmm. condoms? And so that's how the House of Latex project started, by the community saying, hey, do something. And that's what the message I would give today is that young people, if you're listening, if you want something done, you come and ask what you want because the resources are there. You just got to act for it and demand it and help create it and shape it and do it in a way that, you know, something positive and beautiful could happen. 22 years later, look what we're doing. We're celebrating. It'll be the 22nd Latex Ball in 2012. So
amen.
I'm happy to be a part of that, you know?
Amen. That is really beautiful. What I've just realized is I'm going to, because I want to make sure I give also you guys a call as an opportunity to come in and intervene. So before I go into the whole World AIDS Day and what does this mean and what is being done on this in particular day, I'm going to move on, bring also on the platform the runway diva herself, Twiggy Garcon, who is affiliated with FACES, the organization FACES, and what's going to come on the line and basically do the same thing as Luna and explain to us what do his organization offers and the type of services that you can get there. And then they both can take us into what you now we all can learn tonight, the whole World AIDS thing and where did it come from and, you know, what is it about and what is it is. So Switchboard, is Twiggy, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I want to thank you, too, and thank you, Luna, Father, for coming on this show. I thought it was very last minute. I don't know what you guys had scheduled, but thank you for taking the time out to just give the community and everybody that's listening, because I post everywhere, so I'm sure people who listen that's not maybe even gay, my family, your family, anybody, but just to give the whole abroad community some information and some details. So really quickly, Twiggy, I want to go into basically the same thing that I just went into with Luna, and I want you to tell the gay community what organization do you work for, what is it that the organization do, and how did you get in this field, and you know, when did you get in this field, and how long you've been in there, how long you've been in the field. Go.
Okay. I work for FACES New York, which stands for Forging Ahead for Community Empowerment and Support. It's the eldest minority-operated and ran non-for-profit agency that services HIV in the Harlem community. We do everything from COVID case management to HIV testing to educational presentations at high schools, behavioral interventions for gay and bisexual men. You name it, we pretty much do it. But our population, our target population, is pretty much geared towards minority, which the grant that I'm on is minority men who have sex with men between the ages of 14 and 24. Although we do tend to extend beyond that, you know, as far as our age range. I, like Luna, am a community health specialist, so I'm charged with the task of doing presentations in high schools. Like I said, HIV testing. I do three behavioral interventions, which are motivational interviewing, which is a one-on-one counseling type of format. Three of me, many, many, many voices. A lot of people are familiar with that one. And then one that I developed myself, which is a community-level intervention that myself and Jack developed, is called The Wiz. So that's another thing that we do at FACES. But the difference between, one of the major differences between GMHC and FACES is that GMHC is a gay-cultured organization, meaning for the most part, everything around their services is LGBT, where my agency is a gay-friendly organization, so only the contracts that myself and a few other people work on are LGBT related. We have contracts that are completely not LGBTQ related at all.
And how long have you been in this field, Wiggy?
This spring coming up makes 4 years, and you have to excuse the noise in my background because I'm outside. But this spring makes about 09, so 3 years.
Okay. Luna, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I heard, thought I heard a beat. Now,
I'm
Twiggy, you, Twiggy, did you? Was you able to get in contact with Antoine, and is he on the line? Because I don't want to leave him out.
I was, and he's not on the line. Something came up with him at the very last minute, and he sent me a text not too long ago.
Okay. Well, okay, guys, everybody that you just came into, that just started listening, if you hadn't been listening from the first part sector, we had the Dr. Ayanna Christian on the phone line, and now it's after 12 o'clock, and today is World AIDS Awareness Day. I'm going to say Awareness Day. These guys that are on the phone, Luna Khan and Twiggy Garcon, will give us a little insight on what this day actually means and how was it even created. I know a lot of you people out there are privately dealing with your own sickness or even scared and wondering if you are and if you're not. So I made this platform. I'm doing this platform so that you all can get some word of encouragement. And for you people that are sick, maybe you can be encouraged enough to tell your story and that you can help save your child's life or your sister's life or somebody else that is very close to you, because it's a really emotional situation. And that's why we have programs like organizations like FACES and the Gay Men Health Crisis. And Vivica, who I also wanted to be up here, who works for the Bronx Community Pride. And any of you guys that are on the phone line that are involved in the field and have any questions, or any of you young children that have any questions, and shortly I will be taking calls. And please, please, feel free. If you don't have to say your name, you don't have to identify who you are, but if there's something you want to say and if there's something that can save your life, press 1 tonight. So I'm going to go back to you, Luna.
Yeah.
And ask you to, you know, to pretty much start off. We and both of you on the phone, so we're gonna go back and forth. Like this World AIDS Day, I really get. We have the AIDS Walk. I heard we have a cancer. I guess the Cancer Day. But what I didn't know of is the World AIDS Awareness Day. I didn't know of that. I was looking on both of you guys, Will and Luna. You're always putting up different things about the cities and which was more populated and how many people. And Twiggy, you had something on the wall that talked about how many people actually died today, you know, or something like that on your thing or whatever. Where did that come from, Luna? Where the whole world is? What is that basically about from the gay men health crisis perspective?
Well, in terms of World AIDS Day, it didn't start with GMHC or anything like that. It was I actually don't know who started it, but I know like everything that's an epidemic or anything that needs awareness. It gets its day, and so December 1st of every year since 1988, it's World AIDS Day. And it's been around since 1988, and it's really just to increase awareness and fight prejudice and improve the education towards HIV and AIDS. And so that's how it was created. The other name that it also goes by is Day Without Art. A whole bunch of artists that were dying of AIDS in the 80s, Visual AIDS, which is another organization that's fabulous, and I'm a part of Visual AIDS. They document the work of artists living with AIDS, and so they keep their legacy alive, and they help promote their work, because a lot of the work of artists with AIDS is about HIV and AIDS and education. So visual aids supported Day Without Art. And so what happened back in the 80s and early 90s, every museum and every gallery in New York City and in the world would cover all of the art on the wall. So imagine going into the Metropolitan Museum and seeing everything covered. And it was in a tribute to all the artists that were lost, because surprisingly, and then you could imagine with the 1.2 million people that, you know, that are living with HIV in the United States, imagine the amount that that have died. And so a lot of them were artists, and as you know, gay people are basically creative and artistic. And
talented,
so
yes,
you know, and for an example, I'll use Somebody Ballroom. Imagine the works of what's his name? Oh my God, his name just escaped me. Bizarre, Christian. Imagine his work not being around anymore, and imagine Avis Pendarvis' creation not being around anymore. You know, because when people were dying in the 80s, they would throw all their stuff out. And so that happened to a lot of artists that are unknown today. And so Visual Aids helped create Day Without Art to sort of bring light to those artists. And so Day Without Art is part of World AIDS Day, which started in 1988. And it's basically, it started as a day, but, you know, we celebrate it now. It's like, it's kind of like a week now, because for a week I've been doing events left and right. Today I had a career day at a high school in the Bronx. And, you know, I talked about my work and, you know, being infected and all of this stuff with young people. And so it's like a week now. So eventually it's going to be like World AIDS Day month. But I think every day should be a World AIDS Day, because we all need to be on top of, you know, supporting each other, educating each other. I know you, Nicole, I know you're always telling young people about safer sex, because I hear you say it all the time when we're at meetings and things like that. But I think that it, with our community, I think it's important that parent and parent figures and really members, everybody should play a role in that. And so, yeah, so every day, every house meeting, every ball should be a World AIDS Day.
Amen.
And we need to, you know, acknowledge those who are passed and those who are infected and celebrate those folks. So,
thank you. And, Suki, what is your organization actually doing in preparation for World AIDS Day? What is it that you guys will be putting out or will be doing for the community?
We're, because we are such a staple piece, and specifically in the Harlem area, we're doing it's this thing we call hubs, where on different points on 125th Street, there's a select group of individuals, you know, staff people from our agency. They give out the, you know, the red HIV AIDS awareness ribbon, obviously, and then we give out poems and facts that have to do with HIV and AIDS that people wouldn't ordinarily know. Like Luna just stated, there's an estimated 1.2 million people in the United States infected with HIV and AIDS. About 20% or 1 in 5 of those people do not know their status.
Oh my God.
So you could imagine that out of 1.2 million people, 20% don't know their status. That's why the numbers keep rising and rising and rising. So it's really about, we're pushing to get tested and to know your status. My contract, like I said earlier, we do connection to care. We don't actually do care at my job, which is, you know, medication and so on and so forth as it relates to once you find out that you might be HIV positive. We don't actually do the medical aspect of it, but we do connection to care. So knowing your status is so important, and the fact that it's such a large number of people that do not know their status is why the numbers are continuing to rise. Like you said earlier, there's a few facts on my page about the rise in HIV and AIDS, and honestly, the epidemic is the most on the rise within not only African-American, Hispanic, Latino, and minority communities, but more specifically in the men who have sex with men or LGBTQ community. So it's really about knowing your status, and once you do know your status, seek the appropriate care.
Mm-hmm. Right. Luna, oh, wow,
yeah.
Thank you guys so much. I greatly appreciate this. You guys that are on the phone line, I hope you have your mothers and your fathers. You know, this is very special for me, and it should be for you, and I hope all your children are listening, and you guys yourself, and that you are empowered by this message. Luna, a while back, I heard you talking maybe a couple of years ago, you know, I'm very into it, or I need to be actually getting a job into this. That's how much I do as far as this whole situation goes. And I'm always paying a lot of attention to what you say when you're talking about different things and changes that have came about, and, you know, as far as housing and the place of where it's most populated. And years back, D.C. was one of the populated conversations. If you remember this conversation you and I was having, D.C. was one of the popular places. And then you had told me, then it went from D.C. to Atlanta. And then you told me that it was here in New York. Is that still, I mean, accurate? Is that still the way it is today?
Well, yeah. I mean, from day one, the major cities all across the United States have always had the highest numbers of HIV rates. So if you think about it, the major cities that gay people love to, you know, get together and be out and about and celebrate and have a good time is New York, Miami, Atlanta, L.A., Houston, Chicago, Illinois, you know, so it's like that. So if you think of the in total, like sometimes D.C. is – I remember at one point in the early millennium, it was like in D.C. was the highest numbers. And then at some point, it was Atlanta had the highest numbers. And the last time I checked, it was New York had huge highest numbers. And not only with what we think, which is, you know, in the LGBT community, but it's mainly women and women, Latina, Black, who are infected, who are heterosexual. And those numbers are going up. And let's not forget the numbers in people over 50 have been rising equally to the amount of the 13th and 19th. So, and because elders are carrying, we don't think our grandparents are having sex. They don't think that they're, you know, they're like everybody else. They think it's not going to happen to them because, you know, I guess for their thing is that, oh, nobody my age is going to have HIV. But it's happened. I've seen and I've recorded some stories of people. If you go to the YouTube show that I have called Women with Voices on YouTube, I recorded a whole bunch of heterosexual women and sharing their experiences living with HIV. And a lot of them were in relationships. And some of them were over 50. And so the numbers are going up, and I'm constantly educating my sister. She's a woman that I love. You've met her before. A lot of people from the community know Ms. Dolly, the Big City Madison.
Yeah.
And she's a kiki, and she loves being around the folks, and she loves balls and all of this stuff. But I'm always, like, on top of her, letting her know, look, you know, it also affects you, so you need to, like, you know, really make sure that guys that you mess with, whatever you do, make sure that you are doing what you need to do. And she knows what I'm talking about. And so I try to educate everybody. My work is not just LGBT. I do a million things outside of LGBT. And so it's really awareness is awareness, right? And so I just try to educate as many people who want to listen is who I'm always preaching to. And, you know, and you try to do it in a humbling way because you try not to be intrusive to people. And for an example, we have well, part of the World AIDS Day experience tomorrow. We have an exhibition of and it's free, and you guys could go if you're interested. The Museum of El Barrio in Harlem on 104th Street, the Museo del Barrio. We having an exhibition that's a photo exhibition of women that are impacted with HIV and AIDS in New York City. So it's photos and their stories. And it's free. We're also doing HIV testing there, and that's at a museum between the hours of 10 and 4 p.m. So that's part of one of the things that we're doing. But it affects women, and we wanted to do it in Harlem, and that's why we're doing it at the Museum of Barrio, because that's a respected museum as well. So, yeah. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. This is a full of just the air for Twiggy, does your organizations all what's the word I can use? Is it really overwhelmed with the young community, as in being under the age of 19, who are infected? How big would you say that whole community is? We're talking about the under the 19 community, yeah. The younger youth are infected.
I would say where my agency is, because we aren't more, you know, specifically gay culture, my agency is very, very, very diverse. So we have, like Luna was saying, we have only my department alone deals with LGBTQ. So that's just one department of many in an entire agency. So when you look at it on such a broad spectrum, the age range also broader. So for with my contract, I can speak that we, I would say, 19, our youth are usually start around 17, generally speaking. And I would say the oldest in general, like if I would have to average, would be like 24. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily under 19. However, just being a part of the community as a whole and being not just someone from the outside, being inside the actual community, I can say that that number, age 19, speaks volumes because these are...
Hello, you kind of went low. I'm Twiggy. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, now I can hear you.
Yeah, sorry. The people who are around the age of 19, 20, these are the people who are now really, really starting to take ownership of ballroom now, and they're starting to really get into the traveling and to the this and that, and all of these are factors, well, cofactors that contribute or can contribute to HIV infection.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is just more interesting than I can imagine. I'm going to, you guys stay right here with me. We are definitely not done. I'm going to take a commercial break, and we will come back with, okay, and we, I love you, and we will get, I'm about to do that now. We will come back to taking callers. If you have any positive questions, any awareness questions, any just advice that you may need coming from both of these people, or myself or anybody that can help you, please feel free to press 1. Your identity is not necessary in this topic. If you need to know something that can save your life or someone else's life, I definitely want you to get on this phone line, and I passionately say that to everyone. So we're going to take a commercial break. Lona Twiggy, you guys stay right there. Vivica or anybody else that are affiliated with any organizations that are on the line, also feel free to press 1. Commercial break, switchboard.
The Baltimore City Health Department and the Baltimore Ballroom Coalition present the 2nd Annual Mini Ball Deluxe Conference. Know Your Status, Saturday, December 10th, 2011, at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, 300 South Charles Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21201. 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. The ball will start and end on time. Free HIV testing, door prizes, and raffles.
Cost for the function.
Free. Commentated by the icons Jay Blonick and Sierra Ebony. Beats by the legendary Von Allure.
Know Your Status.
Categories include Mini Grand Prize number 1, Sex Siren. Mini Grand Prize 2, Legendary Open to All. Grand prize number 1,
$500.
Runway, open to all. Grand prize number 2, $500. Open to all performance. Special category, the house with the most people tested.
For more information, please call Keith Ebony Holt at 443-690-5044. Yeah.
The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball, Saturday, May 5th, 2012. Doors open at 5 p.m. Admission $30 all night. Location, Symphony Ballroom at the Blake Hotel, Uptown, Charlotte, North Carolina. Commentators, icon Jack Mizrahi and icon Jay Manolo Blahnik. DJ, legendary Von Allure. Grand prize, $1,500. Bush Queen Realist with a Twist. Mini Grand Prize, $500. Bush Queen Vogue Fest. Mini Grand Prize, $500. Bush Queen European Runway. Categories include male figure versus female figure. 2 trophies. 1 cash prize of $250. Bush Queen Face. 1 trophy, 1 cash prize of $250. Open to all, foot and eye. Male figure versus female figure. 2 trophies, 1 cash prize of $250. Open to all, team treatment. 1 trophy, 1 cash award of $300. And 13 other $100 categories. The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball. Saturday, May 5th, 2012. Charlotte, North Carolina. See you there. Queen of Hearts Birthday Ball Part 2. February 18th, 2012. Youngstown State University's Beagley Center, Youngstown, Ohio. Commentators for the evening, legendary Kevin Jay-Z Prodigy and Leslie Derion. $25 all night. Doors open at 10. Legislative Massage at 12:30. Guest list closes at midnight.
cash category. Grand prize, open to all gold performers, $750. Bring a gift or a $10 pot. Open to all runway, $250. Stem Queen Realist, $150. Butch Queen and Drag Realist, The Transformation, $100. Open to all Thug Realist, 4 trophies, 1 cash award, $100. Open to all Sex Siren, 4 trophies, 1 cash award, $100. Virgin Vogue, $50. The Queen of Hearts Birthday Ball Part 2, February 18th, 2012. See you there.
Girl. Hello, okay, we are back, and if you just are listening, we are here talking about World AIDS Awareness Day, and we are here with the legendary icon, Luna Khan, and the Runway Diva herself, Twiggy Garcon, and we're about to go into my first caller, the pioneer icon, a frequent listener, R.R. Chanel. You are on the line, R.R.
Hey, how you doing, Luna?
Hi.
Great. I just wanted to thank you for all that you do for the community. I think that you're a powerful force in the community. And the thing I like about you most, you've always kept it 100 with the community as far as your status is concerned. But what you do mostly is not only do you keep it real about your status, you let them know that you can live with the virus and still be healthy and still live a productive life. It being, you know, AIDS Awareness Month, or week or day, I would like for you, for the callers who are listening that may not know, can you explain to them exactly what AIDS is and what HIV is and what HIV stands for and the difference between a T-cell count and a viral load, and when should you worry about your T-cell count?
Hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so
much.
Right? I got to do an HIV 101 on the phone.
Well, you have to reach out to your community any way you can get them. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, yeah, of course. Twiggy, are you there? Is Twiggy on the phone still?
Twiggy,
yes,
are you there?
Still here.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry,
do you want to do it together? Ready?
I didn't mean to leave you out. I apologize. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Okay,
well,
you guys.
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you, RR, because, you know, I respect and love you, and I have done so for so many years, and so I appreciate your comment. I know that, you know, it's not easy being open, and I remember from day one that I've always been a part of the scene and always been HIV positive open in the scene, and I know at times it wasn't easy being open about my status, but I always felt that I'm going to press on and still put it in people's faces because, I kind of felt like I was a walking billboard for those who did not want to acknowledge that HIV is a big factor in our community. And so I remember walking phase and deciding to want to walk phase and saying to myself, okay, I'm going to walk and they're going to judge me from my phase, but I'm also going to I'm winning for, you know, because I have HIV, and I wanted people to know I'm lovely because I have HIV. So I remember in my mind, I would psych myself out saying, you know, I'm going to get through this with HIV, but I'm going to win this, you know, at this function. And so that's how I would motivate myself, because it was also part of the awareness of being open and walking my category. I know a lot of people get confused when they say that you are undetectable when you're on medications. When they say to you, because I hear young people talk about this and they're very confused about it, when they say you are undetectable after you're on medication, it doesn't mean that you could stop using condoms and that you don't have HIV anymore. That's the confusion. When they say you're undetectable, it just means that your medication is working and that your virus and the load of it is low. And so that means that you are suppressing the HIV and it's making you live longer and stay healthy and look healthy and be healthy. And so that's what, when the doctor says you are undetectable, you want to hear that. You want to hear the doctor say you are undetectable, because then that means that you are at a state in terms of of being healthy that is great, you want to be undetectable. It doesn't mean that then you could go out and infect people because you think you no longer have HIV, because I've heard young people talk about that. So I wanted to make that clear. I don't know, Twiggy, if you've heard people confused about what undetectable or, you know, but
yeah,
I've heard many stories.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. To address your question directly, HIV is the human immunodeficiency virus. It is what happens with HIV when a person gets infected is HIV enters the bloodstream and it attacks what's called a CD4 cell, and that's a white blood cell, which is a part of your immune system that that defends you against harmful things. So when it what happens is HIV is the type of virus that goes into the RNA of the blood cell and not only changes it to HIV, but then it also forces it to replicate itself. So not only do you lose T cells, but you gain HIV cells and as a part of the infection. AIDS is the next step where your T cells fall below a certain count and your HIV or your viral load number rises above a certain amount. And at that level, then you become diagnosed with what is AIDS or acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. That's the difference between HIV and AIDS. And that's exactly how the virus works. And as Luna was saying, undetectable is when you are on meds and your viral load is back down to where it's supposed to be and your T cells are back up to where they are supposed to be. And undetectable is when your viral load is so low that they can't really see it in your bloodstream. But just because they can't see it in your bloodstream does not mean that it's not there. It's always present because it goes all the way as deep as the bone marrow. So it's always there. And that supports what Luna is saying, and that you could still infect someone else, but the chances are much, much lower. But that does not mean in any circumstance to go out and still have unprotected sex, to address your question, RR.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that. And that was definitely something that everybody and myself needed to know. And my last and final question is, when people are on, as you said, their meds,
mm-hmm.
Do you suggest that they drink or do drugs and, you know, the things that a lot of people are doing, which causes, you know.
I mean, personally, I say that obviously for anyone, you should always still live your life, but you really should not do anything in excess. Too much of anything is a bad thing. So obviously, if you're drinking too much or doing too much of anything, it's going to be bad for your health. Now, when you know that you have a compromised immune system, then that means you have to be even more careful than someone who does not have a compromised immune system. So you should always take that into consideration.
All right. Thank you so much. Does HIV have a face?
No.
No.
Oh. So I wouldn't know if it's the person that's got that muscular body or that fine one that's on the corner over there that's walking sex siren.
There's no face.
So what should I do if I just happen to run into somebody like that? I have to wrap it up?
Yes.
Yeah, you have
each
to ask them about their status and if, whether you believe them or not. But, you have to ask them about their status, and depending upon your relationship with the person. I mean,
but what if they tell me they got tested and I believe them?
Luna, you can take this one, but I would personally say that it's completely on your discretion whether you believe them or not.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell young people all the time, don't believe what people say, obviously.
Yeah.
I would always say, you know, wrap it up because, you know, you never know these days, especially because everybody's healthy now with medications. And so I could say that I don't have it. If my face wasn't on a poster in the subway in New York City, nobody really would know Luna has HIV, right? And so I could go around telling people I don't have it. Let's do it. Come on. You know, but that's not the case. Like, HIV doesn't have a face. And I think, that, you know, when somebody is sexy and hot and all that, and he's telling you, you know, this and that, and I'm cool and I'm all right. Like, I would be like, hell no. Like, still protect it. Not only because, you know, okay, fine, he doesn't have HIV, but you still have HPV. You still have syphilis, that sometimes people have syphilis and have no idea that they have it. You could get hepatitis C and your liver, you know, gags, and then, you know, so you have other things to look, you know, to be careful about. It's not just HIV that we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about HIV because it's World AIDS Day today, but the reason why we're constantly telling people about condoms is not just about HIV and AIDS. It's a whole bunch of other shit that is out in the world, and And, you know, you don't want that in your body. You want to be able to live long, be 105 years old, and still be sitting and still judging at a ball.
Lona, do you remember when Albert had first started working over at GMHC, and mm-hmm. he had started doing those classes for houses, and the house that brought the most kids to the meetings for the HIV, that they would get a calendar done of their house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the House of Ebony and the House of Chanel were the first two houses to participate, and the House of Ebony won mm-hmm. over the House of Chanel for the calendar because they brought the most members, which they had a bigger house in the New York chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was such a great thing that Albert had did, and I just wanted to acknowledge him for starting, you know, that particular event at GMHC. And I think that, you know, GMHC does a wonderful job with the community, and I also think the community up in Harlem, you guys are doing a wonderful job. So I just want to thank you guys for being very informative, and may you continue to be blessed and continue to put the message out there for those who need to hear it and those who don't want to hear it.
Thank you, R.R.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Amen to that.
And thank you for acknowledging Arbor, because Arbor did a huge, amazing amount of work at GMHC that still we're still celebrating and doing the same work. And I just think that it's, you know, it's unfortunate that he's no longer here. But, you know, each day when I go to work, I think of him because, you know, I have his picture in my cubicle. And, you know, anytime I talk to any youth at GMHC, I always think of him because I was one of those youth that came to him and spoke. So, yeah. And I do remember the calendars. They were fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So, you know,
that was a nice project.
I've been around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they also gave me an award, GMHC, so I appreciated that, too.
Yeah.
So thank you guys again.
Thank you so much. Thank you,
RR, for calling in. I greatly appreciate it. That was the pioneer icon, RR. Switchboard, I can no longer see that chat box. If we have any more callers, could you please post the number up there? Because I can't see it at all. I don't know what the hell just happened. But if you're on the phone lines and you are listening to this conversation and there's some type of question or something you would like to ask or some type of homage or any type of statement or comment that you would like to give to Twiggy and Luna, please feel free to press 1. And
877-440, you're live on the air.
I didn't press 1, but I'm just listening.
Oh,
hi.
Thank you for listening.
Nice voice.
All right, do we have any more callers?
Hello? No, we have no more callers. I want to thank Twiggy and Luna for all their work that they're doing in the community, and I want to let them know that I love them. How you doing?
How you
that
doing?
That is the overall Mother Kelly Couture. Thank you. I don't know what's going on where I can't get the inbox, so if there are any callers, Twiggy, your background, if there are any callers on the phone line and you would like to join into this conversation, please feel free to press 1 if there's any information that you may need and stuff. You can definitely press 1, and Luna and Twiggy are here with us, and we'll be here for the next 20 minutes to help us guys to be more aware about what's going on. Okay, Luna, does the Gay Mental Health Crisis offer any educational or vocational services there?
Sorry, hold on, Luna. Hold on before you answer that question. I have another caller. 757-419, you're live on the air. Okay, they hung up. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tuna Luna, come on.
Mhm. Oh, hi. So you said, do they have what?
What type of educational or vocational educational services that they offer there at the Gay Mental Health Crisis?
Yes, I do know that GMHC has a workforce development. Part of that is they have a GED program there. And so at GMHC, you could get your GED, you could get workforce development, be a part of the workforce development, and they get you ready for work, and they have relationships with, you know, obviously with community members and things like that. And so you could, you know, instantly, after you graduate from the program, find work. They link you to places where you could, use your services and the things that you've learned while you were there in the job development team and all of that. So, yeah, we do.
Twiggy, do FACES offer any of those type of services?
Yes, we do. As a part of our MI program, well, our umbrella or portfolio of services, period, you have the option of meeting with any one of our community health specialists individually. And as a part of that one-on-one kind of care plan or change plan,
to get you on the track that you need to go on. You have access to resume writing workshops, job readiness, courses. There's a plethora of different things that we also offer similar programming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cal, I think you can also try to do that again because I just got the numbers that you just had mentioned. So maybe if you hit the inbox, it'll come back up again. Like I said to all you callers that are listening and you people in the chat room, if you have any questions or comments or statements that you would like to contribute to this conversation, please, please feel free to come on this phone line. Getting information for yourself or friend can be a lifesaver. Luna, do you guys offer, when I'm talking about this, is do you guys actually service the prostitution community? Do you go out, do you have vans and stuff that are out in different clubs, and where?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on the evenings, the nights. I do know that the testing department is always out in their van doing HIV testing. I know sometimes they do Vogue nights. Sometimes they do they go to 14th Street area, Christopher Street area. They're in Chelsea, they're in Harlem, and you can't miss it. It's like the big lime green van, and so they're constantly doing that. In terms of prostitution, I know we do, because JMAC is so huge, different people do different types of outreaches, and I know that myself and Jazzy and a few of the kids, we've pumped up and down Christopher Street during the summer, and we've handed out condom packets and pussy packs and female condoms, and we've provided a lot of services and how you call those the cards that have like the list of information and support systems that we have at GMAC. So we're constantly doing stuff like that. So I know we do that, and I know the testing department is always constantly testing. I know at the Latex Ball this year we tested like over 80 people alone, so that's great. Like, that's considered, you know, good. 80 people tested for, you know, some of them for the first time at the Latex Ball. So.
And, Twiggy, yourself, do y'all have vans and stuff? And where could these people find the vans, and where are y'all frequently located at, if y'all do have? Twiggy?
Sorry, it's my phone.
Okay.
So, yeah, as it relates to us, we don't really do the van outreach. We kind of do like a walking hands-on one-on-one approach. We still target pretty much the same areas. Most of us nonprofits target pretty much the same areas where we know that people that are at high risk would or tend to be, but our focus is in Harlem. I can say that as it relates to the way that our programming is set up, ours is more of a client-based programming. So because so many of us have clients that, yes, they may escort or they may prostitute, we reach out directly to those who are already in care, but we also do outreach. So we still pretty much cover the same areas. So, you know, we try not to oversaturate, but at the same time still get our job done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I
mean,
for an example, like at Vogue Nights, I sometimes bring, and I know Twiggy's done so, where she brings information from her, from Faces. I know I'm constantly every week try to bring something new, a new card, some more condoms, a different type of condom, a bigger condom, a female condom, you know, try to just, you know, give something to everybody every week. So I know I do that every Tuesday.
Okay. Well, I know, you know, it's kind of, I wish that we would have a lot more flow of a call whenever you had dealing with this type of conversation. The community seemed to go quiet. When you guys shouldn't, you should ask as much questions.
The community's not going quiet. That cheap computer is going quiet over there. You have a whole bunch of callers. 757-419. You're live on the air.
Hello. Hi, Nicole. This is Susan. Right.
Hi, Susan. How are
Hi,
you?
Luna.
I love you. Thank you.
Love you, too. Hi, Twiggy. I wanted to thank you guys for coming on the show and helping us. And I don't know if there was a problem. I called in earlier. Kelly read out the number, but I got disconnected. But I wanted to call in on World AIDS Day because I have been affected greatly as far as the community is concerned. But my mother, who had been an IV drug user most of her life, was infected and with HIV. And, well, actually, at the time, it wasn't even HIV. This was in the early 80s. It was still GRID. So We didn't know what it was. We didn't know what was going on. I just came home from school one day, and I'm in Philadelphia, and my mother, we consider her a hypochondriac because something was always wrong with her. She said, you know, they told me I have 2 years to live. And I was like, you know, I remember walking up the steps saying, Mommy, you know, come on. If you stop doing what you're doing, you know, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, you know, she got, towards the end, she got so many infections that most people don't even encounter, excuse me, and just the stigma. She had been drug-free for 10 years, and I remember when she went out with a friend of hers, and I said, Ma, don't go with her because she still is using. And she's like, oh, I'm just going to drop her off in North Philly. And my mom came home white as a ghost and told me that her friend overdosed in a car. And then soon thereafter, she found out that one time that she slipped up in 10 years, she was infected.
Mm.
But Twiggy, I think you were saying you were dealing with not just the LGBT community. That was, you know, for my mom, even though she was gay, but that wasn't, you know, it wasn't sexual related. There's so many different ways that you can come across HIV,
mm.
you know, or... I just really commend you all. Pardon me?
Absolutely, you're right. There are so many ways.
But Luna, I followed you for so many years. I'm much older than you, so I've been able to follow you. But I just really commend you for just the way you reach out to the community, and it shows a lot of love in your heart because, you know, we are just hard to reach sometimes. Like Nicole, you're saying, you didn't feel supported in the show tonight. People are listening. We're just kind of hard-headed and hard shells to crack. But I love you all, and I appreciate you, and I'll be listening. The women's scene, we're getting involved right from the jump in awareness because we do understand that our numbers are rising, and we don't believe in using female condoms. We just want to be trusting, and sometimes it backfires.
Mm. Wow. Thank you, Susan, so much. And I'm so sorry for your loss. And I send as much sympathy as to you as I can possibly from my heart. And thank you for calling into the show and supporting the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll be listening from the chat room.
Next caller is, because my cheap computer is fixed overall, Mother Kelly Couture. My next caller is 614-516. You're live on Assisted Assistant for Real Show. Hello, 614-516. They don't give a fuck. Let them go. My next caller after that, it will be 205-862, my legendary sister Danielle Icon. You're live on the air.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Hi, sweet sis. What's going on?
I'm calling to commend Luna for all the work she does in the community as far as with the gay children and all that stuff. I really appreciate that. But I'm also calling to commend you, Nicole, for everything that you do with the film queens that are involved in the ballroom scene as far as housing and as far as medication, as far as food stamps, as far as all that stuff. A lot of girls don't know that you've been there for a lot of girls throughout the years in numerous parts of their life, whether it be health situations, whether it be homelessness or anything. You've always been there for the girls, Nicole. And I really want to commend you for that because it takes a lot of courage for a girl to actually help another girl. And you've always been that girl. They might say shady things about you or have something to say, but if you ever get involved with somebody that actually helps you in your time of need, that's very difficult in this community. And you've always been there for everyone, even for those who don't want to admit because they're ashamed. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You've always been there for people, and I want to commend you, sis, because it takes a lot of courage, and I love you for who you are. I really do.
I am. Thank you so
much. And I appreciate that because you have helped a lot of girls who aren't even here anymore. You've helped them in their final days, for their final days to be comfortable and relaxing. You know what I mean? And, you know, your name don't get mentioned a lot when it comes down to HIV and AIDS as far as helping people, but you're also a positive role in this ballroom community, Nicole. You are.
Thank you very much, dear yo. Thank you. And I'm so overwhelmed right now by what you say. I love you so much, sister. And thank you. Thank you. And I do everything from my heart. So recognition is not too much needed, like Luna and Twiggy speak. And Dr. Ayana Christian spoke as well. It's all from my heart. But thank you so much for supporting me and all my sisters and all the femme queens that support this show and that are listening to Luna and Twiggy here tonight. Thank you.
And can I say something before I go?
Okay.
Considering the fact that tomorrow is World AIDS Day, I just want to give a special shout out to all my girlfriends who aren't here anymore. You know?
Thank you. Thank you, and that shout-out is coming from me, too. I approve of that message. Thank you, Yelly. I love you so much. Thank you for coming on the show. Okay, we have another private caller. You are now on the Sister to Sister For Real show with Luna Khan and Twiggy Garcon and myself.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Private caller? No, okay. My next caller would be 917-345, the icon, legendary, realness diva, my auntie, Letitia Revlon. Thank you, Liz, for calling in.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Nicole, Luna, Swiggy, and Mother Couture, Kelly.
Hi, everyone.
I just wanted to say, for the caller that just called before, like, she just made me aware of something. She just made me aware of something that I didn't even know. I didn't even know, Nicole, that you did that for the girls. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've been there for them like that as far as with housing and trying to help them out with things like that. Because you do have girls that's out there that do help out like that, but that is positive, and that's something, like, you're going to be blessed for that. You're blessed now, but God is going to bless you for that. Luna and Twiggy, I really appreciate y'all honesty and the help that y'all do, the positivity and the help that y'all do give to the community and to the people that's out there suffering with that. I really wanted to say to the girls that's out there, like, prostituting and stuff like that, that the money is not worth your life. And when I say that, I mean, you do have some dates that will tell you with the quickness, because dates are nasty, they freaks, and they're just disgusting, and they really don't care. Only thing they're trying to do is bust off. So when they try to do things with you, without condoms, and they try to give you more money if you take the condom off, and, like, all that stuff like that, you got to be careful of that. You also got to be careful of, because I used to get high down, too. You understand what I'm saying? But I was always aware of what I was doing to a certain extent. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to let nobody take advantage of me. And you have some people that's out there that, they don't care, they just want the drug. So by all means necessary, they're going to do what they got to do to get that drug. So I just want y'all to know just to be careful out there. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to promote prostitution, but if that's something that you have to do to survive, I'm just suggesting that you just make sure that you use condoms and don't let the cocaine or the crack or the heroin, whatever it is that you're doing, fool you. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't let it fool you into doing something that you that you're going to regret later. Because, like, other than HIV, there are things out there that are way worse than that. You know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to say that. And Nicole, I am proud of you, and you keep doing what you're doing. And that's the same thing with all of y'all. I'm really proud of y'all, and just keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the show. Letitia was one of the ones that always is there to help me get it together in the last minute. I call her Mother Giggles because she's so happy these days. And that is a real good thing to say. Every time I speak to her, she's smiling. And I thank you and I appreciate you that you send all those messages that you do and that you give me a word of encouragement from day to day. So I thank you and I appreciate you very much. So we're going to put you back in the queue. That is the icon, legendary Letitia Revlon. If you're on the phone line and you have
have something that you want to address to Luna or Twiggy or something you would like to know about the AIDS World Awareness Day or just some homage that you would like to pay or somebody that you would like to pay respect to, please feel free to press 1. My next caller is 646-575. You're live on the air, the Sister to Sister For Real Show.
Hey, what's up, bro? This is Jahad Ebony.
Hi, Jahad. This is the legendary Jahad Ebony. Hi, Jahad. How are you?
What's going on, Nicole? I just kind of just jumped in here and listened to the show, and I know tomorrow's AIDS World Day. What AIDS World Day? So I just want to say, you know, I experienced, as an overall father for the House of Ebony, I experienced a lot from the Butch Queens, a lot from the Femme Queens. A lot of people come and confide in me, and just being able to be there for somebody to just simply confide and to be able to vent and be a support for somebody and know that it's not going to get past you and that they can really trust you and that you love them regardless of what they're going through. That in itself speaks a lot, you know. And a lot of these kids need that. They need to know that their name is not going to get drugged through the dirt. They need to know that they still worth something. They still need to know that they're still loved and they should love themselves regardless of the fact whether they're HIV positive or not. I first encountered HIV not even in the gay world. You know, I was in the 12th grade and my auntie Caroline, God rest her soul, was HIV positive. She contracted it from my Uncle Alan. My nephew, Alan Jacob Jr., God rest his soul, died at 4 years old. He was HIV positive. He was born with it. And at that time in my life, I couldn't even, you know, it tested my faith, you know, because I couldn't understand how God could take somebody so young out. And I watched him go through what he went through, and he died at Bellevue Hospital. And I saw a child, and I saw a child enduring grown-up shit, you know. And when he passed away, it took me a long time to get back right with God, but then I understood that God took him away from this world so he wouldn't have to go through a life of growing up and brought him into paradise and brought him into a better place. And then shortly after that, he took my Auntie Caroline. She was a 200-pound lady, and when she died, she was about 90 pounds. Back in 1987, they didn't have the drugs. The AZT was very experimental. So I watched her go blind. I watched her go through so much pain and so much anguish, and I couldn't understand it. You know, so from the gate, I knew that it wasn't just a gay thing. I hadn't even came out yet, you know, and to just be able to go through that. And then, you know, from coming up in this ballroom scene, I never in my lifetime thought that I would experience so much death and becoming so close and so bonded with so many good people in my life and watch them have to go, you know, having to sit at a funeral of somebody so young and having to watch a mother cry and lose a child before she left this world. So it's a serious thing, and I take it very serious in my house. And I don't take it lightly when people, you know, put people's status out there and then they talk about people being HIV positive. You know, when you do that, before you do that, think about the mother that's at home having to worry about her kid going in the hospital or losing their child. That's a hard thing. But before you do that, think about the person that's going through that and the thing that he has to endure or she has to endure on a day-to-day basis. You know what I'm saying? And instead of being spiteful and being evil, just extend yourself and show love. You know what I'm saying?
Amen.
And especially if you're going through it too, because if we just show love and we're that person that somebody can confide in, then you know what? Wow. It opens up so many avenues to where we can send them to people like Luna, to people like Dre, to other people that can get them help and that can give them a direction, that can get them on. There's so many things out there. You got over, 20 different medications. You got growth hormones. You got steroids. You got all these different type of avenues that are keeping people alive, you know, in hopes of a cure, you know. Mm-hmm. So I wish to God that a lot of my friends, the Baltimores, the Eddies, the, you know, the Patricks, the people that passed away that I loved and I grew to love so much, you know, could have confided in people and didn't have to keep it on the hush until the very end because of the way this ballroom and this stigma that we have, and especially in this black gay community,
about AIDS and HIV. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
It's like we got to break down those barriers and just learn to love and know that our brothers and sisters are out there dying and save lives. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I extend myself, when these kids come to me at 17, 18, and 19, and they say, "Dad, I've been waiting to tell you." You know what I'm saying? I'm honored. I'm honored that they can come and they can confide in me, and I love them for that. And I love them. I love their stinking ass. I love them for their all their character defects or whatever it may be until the day they die, until the day they come out with a cure. You know
Amen.
What I'm saying? And that's what it's about. We got to break down those barriers so these kids can come out and they can say, "Look, I'm dealing with something. You know what I'm saying? And I need help." And that help can extend their lives 18, 19 years. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to. We don't have to wait until we see a lesion or a weight loss or medications that can't work or a resistant strand or this and that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you're out there and you're prostituting and you're mixing these drugs in with it, you have to know that, you know, you have a lot of people out there that just don't care. You know what I'm saying? They're using these drugs as an outlet for a slow suicide. And they don't care about infecting the next person. So they feel like, you know, they have this thing in their mind where they're getting out there and they're getting high on crystal or whatever it may be, and they just want to fuck, suck, do whatever they want to do, and they automatically assume, well, if they're doing it, I'm doing it, we probably all positive anyway, so fuck it. You know what I'm
right.
saying? But you have to change that mind state. You have to change that mind state and know that if you're out there and you're doing that and that's the life you choose to live, you know what I'm saying? Then live it right and protect yourself. Your body is your temple, regardless of what you may have encountered. You know,
right.
It's not a death sentence. It's, you don't have to have a black curtain around you and live your life on a short-term basis. You can still have long-term goals, and you can still have a positive life. You know what I'm saying? So we got to extend ourselves to these kids, and we got to love. And that's what it's really about. You know, you shouldn't have to think that because you're a femme queen or you're going through a transition or something that's the only avenue that you have to take. You can go to school. You can get a degree. You know what I'm saying? We have examples out there now. We have judges that are femme queens. We have people that are doing plastic surgery. We have people that are being prosperous and being functional people in society. And you don't have to, you know, turn a trick. But if you do and that's your hustle, then do it to the safest of your ability. You know what I'm saying? And be on point when you're out there. Because when you go on these trips and you go out on the road, I want to see you come back. I want to see you come back in one piece. I want to see you come back happy. And I want to spend more time with you. And I just want to have fun. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to see these kids die. I don't want to sit up in no more funerals. I'm tired of it. You know what I'm saying? I'm 42 years old. If I could do it and I could still be here and standing tall and shining, then guess what? So can you.
Amen.
For every 18, 19-year-old person that's out there struggling or going through something, so can you. You know what
Amen.
I'm saying? And I just want to say that, Nicole, I love you. We talked. I'm looking forward to you interviewing me. Letitia, I love you. And, you know, I came down to North Carolina, and I walked against Letitia. And everybody said, "Oh, Jahad, you should have won. Oh, Letitia should have won." You know what? And I told Letitia, anybody that goes through what you went through and what I've been through, I can relate because I'm a recovering drug addict. You know,
Amen.
I've been out there. I've been in some of the coldest, darkest places, and not just physically but spiritually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've endured and I've overcome. And so for somebody like Letitia and for somebody like the people that, many people that I know that have endured and overcome, you know what? That's realness. That's the
Wait
true realness. That's the essence of it. So for me to even be standing up against and walking against somebody like Letitia, it's an honor. It's an honor, and I love you, Letitia, and I need you to know that. And
thank
I love
you,
Nicole.
Thank
and I
you.
Thank you, Luna, all you guys that are making
thank
a difference.
You.
I love you all, and keep doing what you do. You know what I'm saying? You guys are making a difference, you know, and
thank
I applaud
you
for that.
Thank you so much.
Right.
And now you be looking for me to be calling you and having your own platform where you can express yourself and give all these young people a bigger insight on what's going on here. Thank you so much. That is the legendary Father Jahad Ebony, who was just on the phone lines. If you're on the phone lines and you would also like to join into this conversation, you know I only have an half an hour left before the show is actually over. I'm going to continue asking Luna and Twiggy some questions because I do have some more in-depth questions.
questions for you guys. But if you are on the phone lines, I will be entering calls in the next 10 minutes, and you can be also able to join into this conversation. I would like to hear more press ones, and I would like to hear more from our community. And we're here with the icon Luna Khan and the Deep Runway Diva. Twiggy Gasson, and they both are Luna works closely with the Gay Men Health Crisis, and Twiggy works with FACES, and these are organizations that basically help you get it together. In any situation, they deal with drugs, they deal with HIV, they help with education and everything. So if you have, if you would like to talk to someone, you can see at Twiggy and Luna. I know a lot about Luna. It's very easy to talk to. So can you take a moment, Luna, and give these people and Twiggy, could y'all give them your emails or places that they can also reach out and get in contact with you if there are callers that would like to speak to you? Luna, you first.
Email address would be Luna, L-U-N-A-O, at gmhc.org. And my number at work is 212-367-1017.
Okay, Twiggy.
Email address is Twiggy, T-W-I-G-G-Y, FACES, F-A-C-E-S-N-Y, at gmail.org. My number at work is 212-283-9180, extension 101. And as many people know who have already either come to me for services or to be tested or for whatever, you can hit me up on via my personal phone, Twitter, Facebook, whatever the case may be. Such a poignant point that Jihad pointed out is the ability for people to be able to confide in you. And what a lot of people are afraid of is that their quote-unquote tea is going to get out when they speak to people at agencies. There are laws to protect you against that. Not only could we lose our job, but we get jail time for things like that, for a single individual for spilling someone's tea. So that's something that you really don't have to worry about. I can speak personally with myself and Luna because, you know, we're very close like that, but that's something that you really don't have to worry about. It's silence. HIV and AIDS isn't the only killer. Silence is a killer, and you not going to get tested or you not coming to someone to confide in them about things that you really need to get off your chest can kill you. So it really is important that people come to not only us, but there's, I don't know, dozens of people who work not only in ballroom but in HIV prevention that you can come to just to get things off your chest.
And I'm also available, and I'm always free. You can stop me in the street. You can hit me up on Nicole S. Bowles. And any of you young children, even you older people that want to know something, you definitely can address me, and I'm always looking to speak and to give you any information. Okay, Luna, and Twiggy, I'm going to start with you, Luna, because I know, Danielle, I'm so overwhelmed with what my sister Yelly said, because I do know, and I have been in this way before it has been exposed. I was actually one of the people that was being a mouther, and I learned my lesson very good by being a mouther. You know, you don't go talking about other people. So, of course, I've learned my lesson. But back in time, New York City, when the AIDS rate was arising, they had a program called DAS. That program now is changed to HASA. Is it safe to say, Luna, then you, Twiggy, that the rate here in New York City have risen because of the enormous services that New York City offer? And why isn't that service offered in those other places?
I would say, well, you know, when they do statistics and stuff like that, yes, the numbers are high in New York because a lot of people from other states are moving to New York to access the services that New York City offers for people that are living with HIV and AIDS. I don't work at HASA, so I don't know what their, you know, how they break it down. But I know that these days it's really not that easy to get HASA.
Not anymore.
It used to be. Before, you just went there with your doctor's letter, and you had some form of support and housing. I used to hear stories of young people, who are who purposely would become infected because they wanted to have access, you know, to have a home, basically. And so, you know, I would just say that that's not a way to, you don't want to live with HIV, obviously. Like, HIV is not, you know, an easy thing to live with. Yeah, we're talking about taking care of yourself and being healthy and looking healthy and all of that. But living with HIV, truthfully, for somebody who's known for about, you know, for beauty in some form, it's not easy living with HIV. You know, from the morning I wake up, it's never easy. It's not easy taking your medications. You know, it's not easy concentrating because your medications are making you think, you know, that somebody's standing behind you, if that makes any sense, for taking medications. Like, it really plays with your body, your mind. Like, having HIV is not easy, so I would never recommend any young person to get HIV purposely just so they could get HASA. That's not a way to go. There are services for young people who need housing that, you know, where you don't need to get HIV. So, yeah. So that's what I would say.
Okay. And, Twiggy, and from your point of view, why would you say that the services are not so frequently offered? And I've done my homework, and one thing I'm kind of befounded by is Atlanta. And in my homework research, I realized that there are not a lot of highly populated as it is there. There's not a lot of services there offered there. So, Twiggy, why would you say, or what part of the organization let you guys know why that these other places other than New York City have not been, you know, funded or have any gotten any type of financial background for giving help or assistance to HIV and AIDS?
I mean, I think that there's a few factors that contribute to the equation. One being Atlanta is, obviously everyone knows, is an LGBT mecca. It's one of the biggest LGBTQ, especially as it relates to minorities, particularly African Americans and Latino, populated cities in the country. So when you look at that, you also have to look at cofactors like, well, how many of these people are quote-unquote out, and how many of them will be willing to access services that have that label of MSM or gay or bisexual that will really actually go to them. When you look at New York compared to Atlanta, obviously in the ballroom community, you have people who are a lot more out in Atlanta. But when you look at the general LGBTQ population and then you examine New York versus Atlanta, it's a whole different circumstance. One of the things that puzzles me is that there aren't as many community-based organizations or not-for-profits in Atlanta, and CDC is located in Atlanta. One of their main offices is there. So to me, that for people who don't work in the field, that's the Center for Disease Control, they're actually located in Atlanta. So that even puzzles me, but I personally think the main cofactors that contribute to that are people's openness and outness as it relates to their sexuality and access to services. New York, we already know, is a melting pot full of diversity of cultures and different types of people, so it's easier to be accepted and a lot easier to find somewhere that's LGBTQ friendly than in Atlanta. As far as disbursement of funds, like Luna said, I don't work for HASA, I don't work for the government, I work for not-for-profit organizations. I honestly cannot tell you why they do the things the way they do them. We wonder on our level, every time a contract comes out or every time a grant comes out, well, what the hell or why the hell, but I really don't know.
But also what I think, too, is that New York, you know, New Yorkers demand and want services, right? So New York was one of the first states to say, hey, you know, you need to take care of this population of people that are living with HIV, and what is the government going to do for us? So the same way that New York City did that is the same way that people in Atlanta, people in LA could get together and say, look, government, we need services, we need this, we need that, and you need some form of representation to say, look, we need services, we need this, we need that. And so that's how New York got it. They went up to Albany and fought to get the rights to get services and get a program called HASA and get all the other things that come with it.
Yeah, because it's not just HASA or, you know, and that's just out, and there are a lot of other programs that are out. That being a largely program that everybody come here looking for. And like you said earlier, I do know people myself that has actually allowed their T-cell count to go down and their viral load to go up. The viral load is actually the amount of the virus that is in your system. The T-cell count is the your T-cell count basically is like you have these three big balls, as I went to the class, and the HIV is basically killing off, am I correct, the white cells?
Yeah, T cells are CD4 white blood cells. And
yes.
What happens is they don't necessarily kill them off, but they go into the RNA and they turn them into HIV cells and replicate themselves.
And
so
without
they not
your
only transform the cell to turn from a CD4 into an HIV, but it replicates itself and repeats itself in your bloodstream.
Wow. And without, okay, I see that we have a caller, and if anybody else is on the line and you want to participate in this conversation, definitely feel free to press 1. We are winding down to the end of the show, so you guys can press 1 at any given time that you like. Okay, so, but we need T cells. So when these white CD4 cells are infected by the virus, common things can start happening to us quickly, such as colds and pneumonia and and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, we call them OIs, opportunistic infections, and those are the things that really do kill someone. It's not usually HIV or AIDS that, quote-unquote, kills someone with the virus. It's usually an opportunistic infection, and that's pretty much self-explanatory. They take the opportunity of you having less CD4 or white blood cells to protect yourself to infect you, and therefore, your illness takes course.
Okay. All right, Luna, I know you got to get ready for work in the morning, too, you and you as well, Twiggy. We're going to take some more callers. If you're on the phone line, I'm about to wrap up my interview. I've had a long night, and I'm very pleased with the outcome. My first caller is 347-736. You're live on the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Hi, yes, this is Antoine.
Hi, Antoine. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Nicole?
I'm great. How are you? They said that you were able to get on the line today, so I was, I did ask about you, but you sit right there. You just coming aboard can actually let me be able to let go. Twiggy, do you have a little bit more time, maybe 10 minutes?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and we're going to let go of the iCall legendary Luna Carr, who works for Gay Men Health Crisis. Luna, I want you to give a word of advice on your, leaving off the show. I want you to give a word of advice to the young children and just something to people that just want to be involved with the gay scene or just want to be gay itself. And could you end it off with that statement you always say, that person, live, that, like, I like that.
Which one?
where you say at Albert's funeral there was the famous actress and she said live, and I kept asking you what exactly.
Oh, that's from Mame with Rosalind Russell.
Yes.
1954, I think it was.
I like that. But could you give us some over the community and the young people that are listening to that, mm-hmm. and could you end it off with that? I like that.
I'm trying to remember the line now. But basically, I mean, I say it all the time. I talk to young people all the time, and sometimes you hear me say it in the Luna show and things like that. Basically, enjoy life. Do what you want to do. Have fun. Life is short. And really stay focused on the things that matter for you. Don't worry about what other people are saying or who's pointing at you. Do what you love to do, because the minute you blink, you're going to be about 20 years older. And you're going to go, wow, what did I just do with my life? So I would say that. I would say to just live, and enjoy everything. But be safe, obviously. You could be, how could I say that? Can I say it bluntly? You could
bluntly.
Be a slut if you want. Be a slut if you want. If you want to munch down and chew on some dick and whatever, do so. But there are safe ways to do that. There are safe ways and things that you could do to prevent you from getting anything, from any STD, from getting HIV. That's what I would say. I would say just learn how to have safe sex and enjoy it. It's fun having safe sex. And there's things that you could do with safe sex. And you could have, delicious, safer sex by including, juices and things that will just make it feel so much better. Like, it's really fun.
Okay.
So I would just suggest you explore and start with yourself. Do it when you're home masturbating with yourself. Play with yourself. See what it feels like to masturbate with a condom. Make your mind start thinking that and pleasuring yourself with the condom, because that's how you're going to switch your mind. Because I know a lot of young people say, I don't feel it. Make it feel it. Put some lube in there and just go off. And if you want to do it with a beat, go ahead and do it with a beat. But what I would say is enjoy life, because life is really short, and just be smart about the choices that you that you choose to do, but also have conversations with those people that you plan on having sex with. It's not that hard to say, when was the last time you had sex? When was the last time you did this and that? You know, like start having conversations with the people you're going to mess with. And
mm-hmm.
I think that the conversation will open up, and then you'll learn things about your partner that you probably never knew, and you take it from there. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That is the legendary Luna Khan.
Thank you, Twiggy.
Thank
have
you.
Fun.
Love you too.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
All right. Take care and enjoy work tomorrow. Okay,
right.
Callers, if you're on the phone line, we have now Antoine Balenciaga, who was supposed to be here earlier, but something unfortunately came up. He's here now, and I'm going to give him the floor for him to basically explain what is it that he do in the Chicago, Illinois area, and what is the type of services that his organization offer, and what are they doing out there to help the people that are infected or the people that to try to keep the people from getting infected. So, Antoine, are you there? Hello? Antoine? Well, switchboard, is Antoine still there? Yes, he might, I guess, have us on hold. Twiggy, could you could text him or something? Or I guess he may have us on hold.
Yeah, I'll text him.
Okay. If there's any phone people, he's gone now. Okay, well, we have 10 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to just basically end it off with Twiggy and saying to you, if there's the same thing as Luna, what type of advice could you give to the young gay community and what they should do and what they shouldn't do and how they can live, and go on and have in life sex with sex being safe?
I have two things. One, there's so many balls, so many different things with the same thing, but love, it truly is the message. You can't expect to get love in any other form, whether that's unprotected sex, whether that's a relationship, whether that's you finding someone who's quote-unquote your soulmate or whatever the case may be, until you love yourself. We have so many institutions outside of ourselves, like church, our family, school, all these other things that teach us that being gay or loving the same gender as ourselves is not okay. And what you naturally love and who you naturally love is absolutely okay. But before you love someone else, you have to love yourself. Secondly, is to open your mouth. The same way you open your mouth to suck dick, the same way you open your mouth to eat ass, is the same way you need to open your mouth to tell your girlfriend, Miss Thing, you need to get it together. You need to stop doing this. You need to do this. You need to go get tested. And that's really what it's about. Open your mouth. Have a voice. You don't have a voice for no reason. Use the voice that you have to help yourself and to help those that you really care about and love that are around you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And that is the Runway Diva, Twiggy Gasson. Twiggy, I thank you. I greatly appreciate you coming on the show and being so bold and giving us all this information and stuff that we needed today. I thank you so much. And I want to take the time out real quickly before I dismiss the show and we ended up with love on top. Everything is love. In order to communicate effectively, we need to communicate with love. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. I want to give my condolences to the pioneer icon, Tony Revlon. One of his children, Rhonda Revlon, who's in my prayers, and maybe she should be in yours, and include her in yours, for she was involved with a very bad accident. She's in the hospital, and it was surrounding a date. And unfortunately, it was a very bad experience, and she's on critical condition. So you guys out there listening, you know, definitely include Rhonda in your prayers. And you be safe. You know, if you are getting into cars and if you are turning tricks, because that's the type of lifestyle, and this stuff has been around for the beginning of time. So you are not being judged when I make this statement. It is not just your fault. It's your fault if you don't want to make a difference. You can only change yourself. You can't change the world. The way this lifestyle has been before we all got here. So if you're out there and you're dating and you and everything, don't trust everybody. And you know, use protection. And if you're getting in the car and it doesn't feel right, and you know, you feel that this guy is crazy or maybe he's on drugs, maybe you should try like hell to get the hell up out of there, because your life can be on a line. This is a dangerous game, and you have to have a lot of street smarts and common sense when you're trying to get into that type of the sector. A lot of my conversation was also about prostitution. I'm going to actually go back on that. Thank you to TT, Letitia, and Danielle. And thank you to my mother, Joseph Princess, and all the listeners and callers out there, Twiggy Luna. Especially thank you to Dr. Ayanna Khan. Thank you for gracing this show tonight. And I'm going to say it to like the way my sister, my legendary sister, said, wherever alley or, you know, doorway or club or whatever you in and you're doing something, please do it safe. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. And the life you say just may be your own. Look forward to next Wednesday, the pioneer icon, Tony Revlon interview. And after that, there will be lots more to come. Thank you for all listening to me. I love you. If you want to have any questions or statements, you can always hit me up. And y'all have a safe, blessed week. God bless you all. Love on top.